called the Senate Committee on Transportation to order on April the 1st, 2005. And for the record, we're at Dundee City Hall in Dundee, Oregon, and very, very happy to be here. I'd like to welcome everyone this afternoon. I've looked forward to coming to Dundee for at least 2 years because Representative Nelson told me a lot about the Dundee bypass, and so I was very eager to come. And when they asked me to be the chairman of transportation, I thought, that's my ticket to Dundee, right there. All right. And I think that I see Senator Przanski. No, that's another. I thought I saw the spike helmet, so I thought maybe that was him coming in, but that wasn't it. I was waiting a little bit long, but we want to start right on time. We're going to change the agenda just a little bit this afternoon, and the reason for that is that we have some people that need to go on their way after witnessing and testifying about other bills. The reason that we even put other bills on the agenda is we would like for you to see what we do as a committee in the Capitol. So when we come out on our road trip, that's what we do. And we do a little business in a community that is right here with you, and you can see how it works. And so we are going to start we're going to move the Dundee-Newburgh Bypass Project down after we do our little business, which isn't going to take us too long, and let you see that. And so now I'm going to open the Senate Bill 865 public hearing. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 865 requires the Department of Transportation to conduct a state highway system study for the Portland metropolitan area. It would require the state economist to oversee that study. We have received a no revenue impact on the measure, and this bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Senator Starr has provided us with -1 amendments, which he would like to describe for the committee.
Senator Starr is recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I've got a couple of things I'd like to have the committee have. The letter supporting the bill. The -1 amendments honestly replace the bill, but they don't replace the thrust of the bill. It just adds a little bit more definition to how I think we should proceed with the study. And I will, I've got some written testimony that I'll read, and then I'll pass out for the committee to have. I printed this at my home office, and I didn't have letterhead, so it's not on my official letterhead.
All right.
Chair, but it works nonetheless. Senate Bill 865 is about the future of transportation in Oregon and the future of Oregon's economy over the next several decades. I've been involved in the legislative debate over the last several years. What I believe is missing is a roadmap for the future. There's no vision about how we will solve some very real important needs in the very new future and beyond. We've all heard the predictions about how freight will double over the next 15 years, and sometimes I hear a shorter time frame than that. We all have also heard about predictions of how our population will grow. And we've heard the need and the debate about how we need more money to deal with our transportation infrastructure needs. What we lack, quite frankly, is a blueprint, a vision, or a plan. And, Madam Chair, what I provided you is a map. And that map, if you look at it, it was a map that was proposed in the 60s. And the this was what, I'm sorry for the print, but this is the quality that I have. But it says Transportation Plan 1990 in the right-hand, upper right-hand corner. So in the 1960s, they had a plan about how to build, how to deal with transportation in the Portland metropolitan area. Now, if you look at this map, the lines that are in red are proposed transportation routes, and they're proposed transportation routes that never got built. But at least they had a plan. Now, this plan, quite frankly, got derailed because of decisions made inside the city of Portland
in the 1970s about spending transportation dollars on transit rather than highways. And in a lot of ways, we've gone down that road a lot more since then. But here's an idea of what a transportation plan or vision for the future might look like if we move as we move forward. We've heard a lot. Okay, the let me look at my where I am on my testimony. So that's really what 865 is about. It's about looking forward and how are we going to deal with our freight and transportation needs. I've been asked why there's a look back provision in Senate Bill 865, because the study requires us to look back to 1986 about how have we spent transportation dollars. It's really very simple. In order to make good decisions, it's important to understand the outcomes of the decisions that have been made in the past. We have spent a lot of money in the Portland area on transit over the last 20 years. What has been the measurable result of that investment? And I'm sure there's a good answer to that question, but I think it's important for us to take a look at that. What are the trade-offs going forward? How many cars do we need to get off the road in order to, in the future, to maintain a reasonable level of service or, in my opinion, a healthy economy if we do not invest in our highway system? So the question is, if we're going to invest in transit, that's going to take vehicles off the road. How much do we have to invest in transit in order to maintain a healthy level of service? Those are some of the questions that I think this study should look at. What kinds of investments are needed if we are to maintain the current ratios of car versus transit ridership in order to maintain a healthy, reasonable level of service, or once again, a healthy economy? So the flip side question is, if we don't invest more in transit and just were to build roads or build infrastructure, how much infrastructure would we have to build in order to maintain a reasonable level of service? And that's the offsetting trade-off. I think we need to have those kinds of discussions about how are we going to invest in the future. And I think it's important that we do that. And that's why we need to look backwards as well as forwards as we do this study. There have been questions about limiting. I've had some conversations about this bill with folks in the building. There have been questions about limiting the look at transit in such a narrow scope about congestion and its impacts on freight mobility and movement of freight and creating what I consider a healthy economy. The issues are, well, transit does a lot more than just get people out of vehicles and into transit. And I agree with that. But those are more community issues as it relates to community redevelopment or transit-oriented development. And I think what I'm looking more at in this study is on the highway side rather than in the local community or local street side. So, if we need to work on some additional language to make that clearer, I'm willing to do that. But I think that with the legislative record and working with the state economists and the Department of Transportation, we can work through those issues. So that's the issue on transit. The question is, this focuses on the Portland metropolitan area. And the question is, well, isn't transportation needs a statewide issue? And I would agree that it is, but I would also suggest that the vast majority of our transportation dollars are spent in the Portland metropolitan area. The Portland metropolitan area, no offense to the rest of the state, is the economic engine that drives much of our state. The freight bottlenecks that exist today, for the most part, are in the Portland metropolitan area. And so that's why this bill is focused so only on the Portland metropolitan area. If this committee would like to broaden the look and look at the issues in a more statewide fashion, I'm certainly amenable to that and would be willing to amend the bill to accomplish that. But I think that it's important for us to look at this Portland metropolitan area as the as it relates to our state's economy and the economy of the region. That, in a nutshell, is why I have had this bill drafted. There's another study that you mentioned that's being jointly conducted by Metro and the local governments in Portland, and some private sector dollars have been put in the kitty to fund that. My opinion, this study would complement that one, in that study is looking at solely the economic side of of transportation investments and how transportation investments would benefit local businesses. And I see that as something that would complement this. I don't see that one as substituting what this is, what I'm trying to accomplish here.
Your bill requires that the department conduct the study, so you have people here that are going to talk about that from the department?
Yeah, I think there's both folks from the department. I see the state economist is here as well. I think there's some private sector folks here that would also be willing to testify.
All right. Do I have a list?
So thank you very much. I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, Senator Starr. While I'm getting the list of the people that might want to witness on this bill, I want to welcome Representative Donna Nelson, who served with me in the House on the Transportation Committee and has a great background in transportation, and I greatly appreciate your being here today.
And Representative Kim Thatcher.
All right. I think I'm going to call the director first, Bruce Warner, from the Oregon Department. And I also, while you're coming up, welcome Senator Przanski.
Thank you. We have one other representative with us.
Kim Thatcher.
Yeah, Kim Thatcher is here.
Representative Thatcher.
Representative Thatcher. Oh, there you are. Welcome. All right.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. It is a pleasure for me to be down here on this day in Dundee. And I think you'll find out why Dundee wants to talk to you about their needs as you try to leave after you're done with your committee meeting this afternoon. In terms of Senate Bill 865, what I wanted to put on the record here for your consideration is clearly this is an ambitious undertaking. It is going to require some time and resources. It does require us to review the past expenditures from a number of cities and counties, because if you remember right, in a Portland metro area, there's three counties and about 24, and now I guess 25 cities with the city of Damascus. They haven't done much expenditure since 1986, so we don't have to worry about that. But clearly, the intent and the desire by the bill sponsor to have a vision for the Portland area is very important. And what I wanted to point out in this testimony is I think that the Portland metro area would probably tell you that they believe they do have a vision. But I think what everybody's realizing is we don't have enough money to address any mode of transportation in an adequate way. And quite frankly, we need to worry more about freight. And I think that's the intent of this bill. So I believe that obviously the work can be done. It can be done in an expeditious manner, but it will require a significant effort on a number of people's parts to look especially at the past investments. So what we would suggest is the most important part of this study is really looking forward and, again, trying to figure out what we need to do to address the needs of freight, to address the needs of the other modes in that particular area. And looking at this, the entire scope of this study, this could be up to a $2 million study effort between what the department would need to do, what the state economists would need to do, and what we would probably need to do with the help of consultants, which I believe is the intent also of this bill, is for us to hire a consultant with a study team guiding that effort to provide you with the information. I do have the amendments today, so I haven't had a chance to look at those in detail, but it appears there's a lot more clarity now in terms of the bill and in terms of what you would like to get out of the outcome. The things that I wanted to put on the table for you is there is a considerable amount of work going on right now in the metro area. Senator Starr mentioned the Portland Business Alliance proposal that's ongoing right now, but I wanted to call to your attention my testimony that we are working jointly with Metro, with the Washington Department of Transportation, the Port of Portland, to really identify the needs of freight and some of the critical choke areas, choke points in the Portland-Vancouver area. And that study is going on. It's about $729,000 effort right now. And what I think is really important for the committee to understand is the biggest choke point we're worried about is the I-5 corridor. And the I-5 corridor is one that we in the state of Washington are doing some joint efforts, and as a result of congressional action by earmarking dollars for that corridor, we're actually beginning the initial portions of an environmental impact statement to figure out how we would replace the bridges, how we would widen I-5, and also how we would provide other modes of transportation in that key corridor. So my summary would be that freight is critically important. that with the funding limitations we have, we need to figure out ways to prioritize, and with the funding limitations that have occurred over the last few years, the Portland Metro Region and we have worked together to provide investments that we think are addressing the needs, but clearly we need to invest more in transportation capacity in a Portland metropolitan area. The thing that I would call to your attention, the only thing that would be of concern would be, is I think it puts the department, if this bill went forward as passed, it puts us in a bit of an awkward position because we really are appearing to second guess some of the decisions of funding that have already been made. And again, that's where I think the most important thing is for us to focus on the future and again the needs of freight, and we're saying that we believe that we ought to learn from the efforts that are ongoing right now, and as Senator Starr suggested, let's build on those efforts that we have going on now in the Portland area and figure out a way to come up with a work scope that actually fits that. I would like to take the amendments that were proposed today, take a little harder look at them, and maybe if we can figure out a way to essentially address the needs of the committee, if you desire to move this forward with the work that's already being done, so we're not duplicating efforts and we actually get to where the senator would like. So
I would respectfully request also that you look at no duplication. If there is an overlay in any area of what these other groups are doing, then I think that they should not be repeated by the department. We can't afford it. And so also we need to get a physical, not just kind of around.
Right. I agree with you.
We need to know exactly what it would be. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Senator Whitsitt. Senator
Warner. Perhaps I have a different view of the look back than you do. Mm-hmm. As far as you characterize it as second guessing, I'm more inclined to think that we learn from what has worked in the past and what has not worked in the past. And if we don't learn from the past, we're more likely to have to relive the past again. So I really do believe that looking back at the history of what has worked and has not worked would be a very beneficial thing to do.
Madam Chair, and Senator Whitsitt, I understand that it is always valuable to learn from the past. What I'm suggesting is there will be a lot of work to be able to dig out the records from every individual jurisdiction that has invested in transportation in the Portland area. And it's difficult to understand the specific impacts of an individual investment. And because, for example, the Portland metro area, as I pointed out here, has made a lot of decisions and changes in their land use and density allowances along like rail corridors as a result of investments. So we're going to try to figure out what happened if those investments had not occurred and versus what happened with the current system in place and the investments that we've made. So I think what we need to do is understand what we want to get out of that effort, and I concur that we need to look at have a foundation, which what this would do based on, as I said in my testimony, but I think what my suggestion is we focus on the future, which is, I think, where we really want to learn and make sure that we're making investments and with monies we have now in the most cost-effective and efficient manner.
Okay, I'm going to have you step back, and then I'm going to call several people up. I'm going to ask you also in the essence of time so that we don't bore the people of Dundee too much with talking about a metropolitan area. I'm going to call Bob Russell from the Trucking Association, Soren Garber. Okay. And I think I'll bring up Tom Patowski with you. Tom?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I'll be very brief because I've submitted a written statement. From the point of view of the trucking industry, this study is all about a cost-benefit of investment in highways versus investment in transit, and we think that that's long overdue. We support effective public transit to the extent that it reduces traffic congestion. We think that's a very, very positive thing. But what we're looking for is the balance. How do we balance those investments in roads versus transit? And we want to make sure that with the scarce dollars we do have, we're getting the best bang for the buck. So we strongly support the study and hope that you will move it on to Ways and Means. That concludes my.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Soren Garber. I'm a transportation consultant to the freight industry as well as ODOT, Washington State, legislature, other Oregon jurisdictions. Potentially one of the people that could benefit from this bill. I'm also completing the City of Portland's Freight Master Plan right now, working with Ann Gardner's group, the Portland Freight Committee. I want to compliment Senator Starr for his insight in seeking to understand what level of freight capacity we need to maintain the well-functioning supply chains we need for the Portland region. In the research I've been doing for the Portland Freight Plan, I've learned that there are a wide variety of contingency plans and logistics strategies that shippers and carriers must employ.
Pardon me, would you move the mic so that everybody here can,
excuse me,
can hear you? All right, thank you.
In my research, I've learned that there are a wide variety of contingency plans and logistics strategies that businesses must employ in order to meet their customers' needs. And the remarkable dynamics of today's marketplace require efficiencies that leave little margin for error. Primary element in these decisions, in these systems, is shipping. All of the efforts to run a business in Portland can be compromised if goods are not delivered on time. And the greatest risk posed on-time delivery is traffic congestion. Shippers with perishable commodities bound for Asia that are trapped in traffic on Highway 26 and I-84 that can't make a plane, well, that's bad for business. Queues to and from primary highways in the peak hours create a domino effect, delay at marine and airport terminals to and from industrial areas, and so on. And the domino effect just occurs the following day again. Traffic congestion increases the operating cost of every product moved, cutting into businesses' bottom line and raising prices for customers. And one of our greatest advantages in Portland, in attracting trade to Portland, is our available capacity. So I just wanted to make people understand, in just a real way in their everyday lives, how important relieving traffic congestion for freight movement of business is. If some of you read the Portland Tribune the other day, you learned that many other jurisdictions are making massive investments in clearing up congestion. The Seattle-Tacoma area invested $1 billion in the last decade, and the Port of Tacoma is investing $200 million alone this year. And the L.A.-Long Beach area, the world's second-largest port of entry, invested $10 billion in the last 10 years. And one other very important thing about those regions is in all of their comprehensive plans, transportation plans, land use plans, they all acknowledge, and I'm afraid a lot more than we do, the direct relationship between investments, the investments they make in infrastructure, to the health of businesses and available jobs. We don't do as good a job as those regions do. I'd like to talk about this bill, just a few points. What I like most about this bill is that it speaks to the original reasons for why we established our national transportation system. And that's for the purposes of expanding commerce, which is so much more vital today given the opportunities available for entrepreneurs to realize their goals and our overall economy to grow. More than ever, a well-functioning transportation system is essential for us to grab these opportunities. And if we don't, another region or state will in our place. I personally am very interested in the first couple of elements of this bill, looking backwards and trying to figure out through history why we did what we did and what it's really paid for us. But I have two fears about them. One is that if we examine the first two items, not including the amendments, so the first 13 items that you have now, that there will be no means of agreement among the different parties, because I think the way it looks, some people are fearing that it's divisive. And it'll be very hard to constitute agreed upon economic benefits and returns on the investments we make in roads versus the investment we make in transit. I think Director Warner talked a little bit about that. And what would happen with that is that debate would then compromise the credibility of the findings in the end. There will be people that will continue to be divisive. I think it's important to look at the history. If we look at the history, then we have to be very careful in what we want to get out of this bill and just talk a little bit more about the objective credibility of it. If we can't do that, then I suggest we just go right into what we really want to know, which is what freight capacity do we need from here on. And I have one other suggestion for the bill. It's an idea I've been advertising with a lot of other people, and I think it's appropriate here as well. And that's to see how we measure up to other regions. The L.A. Long Beach area, other California cities, Atlanta, Miami, other places that we consider to be very entrepreneurial. And I'd like to see if we can find some means, and I know the state economist is probably thinking of a few right now, about using Federal Reserve data, very normalized data about what our output is, then figuring out what we've invested in our transportation system, seeing on a per capita basis what we're investing in our transportation system, and seeing how we measure up. And I'm not sure I know the answer. Part of me thinks that it might say that we invest less. Part of me thinks that we're investing more, and that would be a good lesson for us to learn.
Oregonians, because of their independence, are not often too worried about what other people do. But I'll take your suggestion seriously. Are there any questions? I'd like to move on as quickly as possible. Thank you very much for your testimony. Do we have a copy?
I have one copy.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Tom Petowski, State Economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. I don't have any written materials for you today, to be very brief. Right now, my office conducts the Highway Cost Allocation Study. We oversee that, and that is the study that sets weight mile taxes, registration fees, and the tax at the pump. And we were put in that position because it was felt that we needed a scientific and unbiased study as much as possible. And I just say that if Senate Bill 865 comes to pass, we would continue in that particular type of role, making sure it was a scientific and unbiased study.
And we just had your report on the cost allocation study. It was very, very interesting. They did an excellent job, and thank you, Tom. It was really well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
And so here is just to inform you that we are presently working on a fiscal impact statement through Department of Administrative Services. Mr. Warner mentioned possibly $2 million as an estimate for the study. We're throwing some numbers around of maybe $225,000 for my office, but we have to see about the amendments.
I like your numbers
study.
Better than yours.
mine does not include the consultant and all the other work.
Okay.
Yes. And I've just informed you, too, that most likely, not that you'd be surprised, but I may even be asking for a one FTE position. That I could use to work both with the highway cost allocation study and with this, so I could leverage the person, and also freeing up my time, because as you know, there's sort of a other part of my job that I do, which is coming up this May, especially.
That's right.
And that's all. So I'm very neutral on the bill, but it's just to inform you about possible resources that we'd be asking for in order to do it.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I mean, the first part of what Mr. Petowski said is the very reason why, when I drafted the bill, I put it where I did. It's just because, one, they've done such a great job in the highway cost allocation study. It's providing that neutral, non-biased, very scientific, you know, facts-based data for us. And so appreciate
well
the testimony.
Done.
And I understand this is going to cost money. There's no question about that. So,
unfortunately. All right. I want to thank all of you for coming.
Thank
if
you.
Any of you want to sit, there are some chairs that are empty. If you choose to stand, that's fine, but I just wanted you to know that there are some empty places for anybody that would like to sit. All right. Ann Gardner, Donald Alexander, and Alan Holstein. Is that right?
No.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, I'm Ann Gardner. I work for Schnitzer Investment in Portland, and we have a number of business interests, including real estate development. And as part of my work with Schnitzer, I manage and review public policy that will affect the business interests. I also serve as the chair of the Portland Freight Advisory Committee, which has been in existence for a couple of years. It was established to create the first ever freight master plan for the city of Portland. And our membership includes 30 men and women from the private sector who are directly involved in the business of freight mobility. And in addition to creating a freight master plan, we've also been examining how the region spends its resource on transportation. And we're just putting our big toe in this. It's hard to get a full understanding. There's about $635 million, we understand, that comes to the region on an annual basis. And about 4% of that is actually reviewed in a public process where you can comment on the projects. And as we went through the process this last year, we observed that there were precious few projects on the list that we considered to be freight projects. And we were sort of curious about that. How could that be when you've heard the testimony here today about having a freight plan for the region and how important it is? But we examined actually the public comments that Metro receives. And just as a way of example, in the bike category, there were 353 letters and emails of support. But in the freight category, there were only 50 letters of support. So obviously, elected officials are going to respond to the voting public in Portland. And the freight community hasn't been front and center in the conversations about how to allocate resources. So we really think that this bill, I'm here to support the bill on behalf of Schnitzer, that we think we do need a fresh, outside, third-party look to help us make sure that the city of Portland and the region is investing appropriately. It's the gateway to the Oregon economy. And so we're here supporting that bill and would urge your serious consideration. Thank you.
And I'm so glad you're here today. We're working on Connect Oregon, Senate Bill 71, and the commission is in it, and now the committee gets a chance to, for those of us that didn't know you, to meet you in person, and because that you are a part of that bill, the commission is as to one of the processes that would go through on the freight project. So,
well, it's very important.
That's important, and that's a very vital part of it. So it's always wonderful to be able to put a name and face together as part of a commission. All right, welcome to you.
Thank you. My name is Don Alexander. I live in Newburgh, laughingly called Ground Zero of the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass.
Okay.
And I checked the wrong thing there. I am in favor of this bill. And the reason I'm in favor of it is because I can see where this bill will do some adverse planning that was not present when we decided to do this 10-mile stretch. And it should, if done correctly, provide adequate transportation from the Portland metropolitan area to the coast. And that's what 99W is all about. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I had called another name, and I believe that maybe I didn't call it correctly. Is it Alan? No? You're Alan?
I'm Alan, but I must have signed the wrong form also.
No, you're just fine.
I didn't have any comment on this Senate bill, but just listening in on the Dundee bypass, of which I'm in favor.
Good. So that's all. We're going to have a presentation for us.
Right. Well, thanks for coming to Dundee.
We're going to have a lot of questions, and thank you so much for coming, Alan. All right. That's all the people that I have listed. Is there anyone else here that wants to make a comment on Senate Bill 865? Did I miss anybody? All right. If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 865, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2115A. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2115A allows the Oregon Department of Transportation to exchange real or personal property for services. We have a no revenue impact statement on the measure. If you will look in your materials, we do have a fiscal impact statement that indicates that the Department of Transportation, in fact, indicates that it might realize lower ongoing operating expenses by exchanging land and old buildings in developed urban areas for land and new buildings of equivalent value at sites more conducive to highway operations. ODOT estimates that it would incur a one-time implementation cost of $5,000, primarily for administrative rule promulgation. And the fiscal impact generally is indeterminate since it would depend on the value of specific property or services involved. You have before you a dash A2 amendment. If you would please look on your original bill, this is primarily a semantic amendment. Modifying, putting two words into line 14, so I will read that entire new section as it would read with the amendment. Mm-hmm. The department may exchange property as provided in subsection 3 of this section, regardless of whether the property is needed, and we're inserting by, required by, or useful to the department, if, in the judgment of the department, doing so will best serve the interests of the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Do I have a list? Okay. I'll call John Jackley. John is with Oregon Department of Transportation. You notice that this is a House bill. That means that the Transportation Committee, and I believe, Representative Fetcher, you're on that committee, are you? Are you on the House Transportation Committee? Yes. All right. So you have heard the bill and have had amendments to the bill, and it's now passed to the Senate, and we have a very small amendment, -2. All right. Welcome.
Appreciate it. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Jackley with the Highway Division at the Department of Transportation. This is a bill that benefits taxpayers, will help local businesses, and get valuable property that's currently held by ODOT back onto the tax rolls. It's also part of our commitment to strengthening and improving the way that we manage our real estate. And, in fact, the primary beneficiary of this bill will be the private sector and taxpayers. This bill allows the department, or would allow the department, to dispose of property in exchange for services. Now, services in this sense means specifically buildings. We can currently trade a piece of property for another piece of property. We can trade a piece of property for a piece of property that has a building, but we can't, without this bill, trade a piece of property for a piece of property with the promise to build a new building that would better meet our needs. The original bill was amended on the House side through their process in two ways. First, it spelled out that services include specifically means property in addition to other things. And it also clarifies that this kind of property could be exchanged whether it was technically surplus or not. And I've got a couple of good examples to kind of show you what we're talking about. In the Portland metro area, we have a maintenance station called the Sylvan Maintenance Station. And it was built some years ago, what was then kind of on the outskirts of town. Well, now Portland's expanded. It's kind of in the middle of the city and in a real busy area. We would love to be able to exchange that really valuable piece of real estate for a maintenance or for property for a maintenance station somewhere else that would be out of the way, not in the way of local businesses, and then the private sector could develop that much more valuable property, which would also have the benefit of putting it back on the tax rolls and producing revenue for local governments. There's another example. Most of us are familiar with the outlet stores in Lincoln City. Well, that was the site of our previous maintenance station, but the developer, the private sector developer who did that, had to take a huge risk because we were not legally able to promise that if they built another piece of property with a building on it, we can do the trade. As it turned out, that it worked out, but that's another example of some real valuable property that was in the middle of a great commercial area that we had a maintenance station on. And House Bill 2115 would allow us to do that kind of thing. But we have other offers as well in central and southern Oregon to do the same kind of thing, but again, absent this bill, we can't trade property for property plus a plan to do the building. We believe that House Bill 2115, again, will help taxpayers get valuable property back onto the tax rolls and help local area businesses in the process, and we'd respectfully request your support for it.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee, if you remember, went on our road trip to Coos Bay, we stopped at the Port of Umpqua, and they had a building that they would like to trade, and this would enable them to at least negotiate that. Doesn't mean you would agree, but it means that they would be able to negotiate that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. I'd also like to point out that in the course of doing this, we're still required to keep the highway fund whole. We can't trade for a lesser amount and take a loss on it, and we still have to follow the state requirements that pertain to the acquisition and construction of buildings.
All right. Any questions? Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This doesn't in any way, the commission is the one that has a say on these. These aren't decisions that are made administratively.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, ultimately that's correct. The commission approves these kind of things.
And this, as you said, doesn't impact ODOT's ongoing budget necessarily, other than maybe to the add side, to the plus side.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, that's correct. We're not allowed to take a loss on it.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Whitsett?
Ms. Jackley, in the event that you were to trade a piece of property that was worth, say, $20 million, just for the sake of argument, and that you, by purchasing another piece of property in a less dense area, you're able to replace the buildings that you had for the property and the buildings for $10 million. What would happen to the $10 million?
Madam Chair, Senator, it would go back into the highway fund.
All right. Any other questions? All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2115, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2115. Senator Whitsitt.
Madam Chair, I move the -A2 amendment to House Bill 2115A to committee.
Senator Whitsitt moves amendment to House Bill A2 to House Bill 2115. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, so ordered. Senator Whitsitt.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2115A as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Whitsitt moves House Bill 2115A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, are there any objections? If not, so ordered. Do we have someone that if I need to call the roll?
you don't
need to on these particular bills. Right. Okay, that's all right. All right, and the last one that we're going to hear is House Bill 2116. I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2116, and I will call John Beckett. So you're already there. Yeah. Let Judith explain the bill a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2116 allows the Department of Transportation to establish a process for establishing and designating speeds on the highways by rule. It would declare an emergency effective on passage. We have received a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure, and it did pass off the House floor unanimously. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. All right, welcome.
Appreciate it. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, I'm John Jackley with the Highway Division at the Department of Transportation. I'd like to say at the outset that I think one reason why it passed the House unanimously is when we testified, we pointed out at the beginning that it had nothing to do with speed zones in schools. and once we provided that reassurance, there was a palpable sigh of relief. What this bill does is it corrects an unintended consequence from a previous bill in the last session. This bill would allow us to do what we'd always been doing, which is to have one administrative rule to set speed zones in the state, other than on the interstates, and then do what's called a speed zone order. We do several hundred speed zone orders per year. If we had to do a whole separate administrative rule for each of these speed zones, it wouldn't allow us to move fast enough to take community issues like safety and other things into effect, and it's an awful lot more expensive. Prior to this to action in the last session, that's the way we had it. We had a single administrative rule, and then we would do a series of speed zone orders. The way these speed zones are done is that on the rural highways, for example, you've got a kind of a default speed in essence of 55 miles an hour. But say you're coming into a town, and then it goes to 45, then it goes to 35, and then it picks back up outside of town. Those non 55 mile an hour segments are called speed zones, and those are set in conjunction by a committee made up of ODOT, state police, and local community folks as well. And it's a very cooperative process, and it works very, very well. Well, that's the way it worked up to the passage of House Bill 2661 last session, which was kind of an omnibus bill to do all kinds of cleanup things and make it easier for drivers, courts, and law enforcement to understand the different speed rules that were going on. We didn't think that that changed the process for designating these speed zones that weren't on the interstate. But then we received an informal opinion from the Attorney General that said that the language of House Bill 2661 inadvertently meant that all speed zone changes had to have separate administrative rules. That was never our intent, and that's why we're offering House Bill 2116 to correct it. And we would respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. I got very confused because we had voted on the bill last session. So I was not clear on why you needed this. So I thank you for explaining it. I looked at this and thought, well, I guess this was just left out of the bill, but it actually was a change for your process.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. It was just an inadvertent oversight. We never intended to have separate administrative rule for each of these 100-plus speed zone orders that we do every year. And this bill simply corrects it and puts it back to the way it's always been.
All right. Any questions? No questions. All right. I will thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2116. And I believe now that I'm going to move on. And I wanted to say to the people in the audience who have been so kind to sit through our little work session here so you can see what we do in the Capitol. And that is that we've just started hearing House bills. On April the 8th, we have a deadline for Senate bills so that certainly most of them, unless we get some permission from some leadership to be able to hold it over, will have to all be passed out on the Senate side. And so we are just beginning now to get House bills into the Senate. So these are some of the first House bills that this committee has seen. I'm going to open now an informational meeting on the Dundee-Newburgh bypass, and I'm going to probably turn this over to the mayor.
First of all, I was wondering if you guys would like to have some water.
You know, that might not be a bad idea. Thank you.
Yes, water. There's a whole
container.
It's
one of those wonderful
spring
days.
And we have enough for everyone in the room.
This is truly a welcome to you, Mayor Ragsdale. This is truly the reason that we've come to Dundee, as well as I would really entertain people from your audience, if they would be so inclined, to come up and talk to us about, after you do your bypass, anything they might want to say to this committee. I think that we're here to listen to voters and to listen to people that represent other areas. And certainly I reside in the city of Coos Bay, where I served as mayor for 8 years. And so I really know very little about Dundee. So be thinking about it, those in the audience, anything you might want to say to us about your community. All right, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Diane Ragsdale, Mayor of Dundee, and we truly are honored and pleased that you have selected our city to hold your hearings in our community and to take your valuable time to listen to this presentation. And I believe you'll hear a number of people will be talking about the bypass, not just from me. This project is dear to our hearts. This city also has a vision, and that vision includes the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. And in fact, this vision, which I have a copy for each one of you, states, because State Highway 99W was rerouted to the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, Dundee now has its own local main street. The redesigned traffic patterns enhance and support the local economy with its visually attractive landscaping and accessible parking areas. The city has assisted in redevelopment efforts throughout the community. And so we are looking forward to having this bypass completed. During the presentation, you will hear from the business community. You will learn more about the history and what actions have been taken and where we are now and what we feel are the needed steps to get this project built. But before starting, I want to introduce some of our local officials that are here today. And I'd like to introduce first Bob Andrews. He is our Newburgh Council President Mayor Bob Stewart has been ill, and he sends his regrets. Yvonne Miller, Dundee City Councilor. Craig Rogers, Dundee City Councilor. Wayne Stock, representing the Mayor and Council of McMinnville. Leslie Lewis, Yamhill County Commissioner. And Roger Worrell, former Mayor of Dundee. I also would like to introduce, for the record, Eve Foote, who is our City Administrator here in Dundee and such an asset to our community. She's out getting water.
On the job.
On the job. She's on the job. At this time, I have a number of local representatives that I would like to have them come up, and I'm going to introduce them all at one time, and then they will speak individually, and I've asked them to only speak for 1 minute so that we
will
not...
We have plenty of time.
Okay.
We're here in Dundee today.
All right, thank you. Roland Souls, he is the founder and general manager of Argyle Wineries. Nancy Ponzi, she's the owner of Bistro Complex and the co-owner of Ponzi Wineries. Jeff Dyke, Cascade Steel, he's the Vice President of Operations. Jeff Palmer, Chehalem Valley Chamber of Commerce President. Wayne Stock, he's representing the City of McMinnville. Brent Adams, he's the Chairman of the Board of the McMinnville Chamber of Commerce. So at this time, I'd like to have all those that I called to come up and testify or speak.
Sometimes we call it testify, sometimes we call it witnessing.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
I'm Jeff Dick, Director of Operations at Cascade Steel in McMinnville. It's a pleasure to be here. Just to give you a little background, if you do not know anything about Cascade Steel, we are a mini mill steel mill. We employ about 460 employees in McMinnville and the outside skirts of McMinnville. We produce about 650,000 tons of steel, semi-finished steel, each year, of which 50% of it is transported through by trucks, and the other 50% is by rail. If you look at that in what we take in on the import side, or excuse me, on the incoming side, we income about a little over 650,000 tons of material product for our raw materials. That equates to about, about 1,200 trucks a month incoming and about 1,000 trucks going out, so about 2,300 trucks in a month coming in and coming out of McMinnville through Cascade, and that is per month. So we have a large amount of volume of incoming products and exporting products through all the way out to the I-5 corridor area. Our primary areas are the Northwest and California. And so anything that has to do with ground transportation and the cost of ground transportation and improvements there will directly affect Cascade Steel and will be a direct improvement. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And before we move from you, let me say that economic development and jobs in Oregon is just tops with the transportation people that are planning it. That's the whole purpose in Connect Oregon, is to help us have a better economy. So, and I know that bill will be of direct influence on your operation as well. Thank you. All right, continue.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Brent Adams, and I'm the chair of the board for the McMinnville Area Chamber of Commerce. And I appreciate what you just said, because that's what I'm talking about. The McMinnville Area Chamber of Commerce has taken a position that we support a bypass. We feel it is absolutely critical to the economic growth in McMinnville. Right now, it's a hindrance not to be able to move product between McMinnville and the Portland metro area. And when we do move product, people like Cascade Steel have difficulty getting their product there. Their drivers have to sit in traffic, costing them direct money. It's actually a pretty big impact on our economy. It also affects the quality of life in McMinnville. Let me give you an example of how that happens. Every 6 weeks, I travel to OHSU for some medical treatment. I can leave my house at one time and get there within an hour. If I leave 10 minutes later, I'm either a half hour to 45 minutes longer in my trip, just from a 10-minute time when I leave. and it's purely simply because of congestion. I also have a letter here from his hiding place. They asked me to provide it to you. It basically is a letter supporting the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and explaining some of the reasons why they support that. And I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
All right. Any questions for either one of the two gentlemen that have just spoken? All right.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Palmer. My wife, Elizabeth, and I live in Newburgh. I moved here from Dallas, Texas 4 years ago, and one of the things that attracted me to life in Oregon, other than a job, was the quality of life here. I'm vice president of sales and marketing of Rexhill Vineyards in Yamhill County, just east of Newburgh. I'm currently president of the board of directors for the Chehalem Valley Chamber of Commerce, also located in Newburgh. Our chamber represents 433 local member businesses. The construction and completion of the proposed Newburgh-Dundee bypass is critically needed. Every area business is dependent on transportation for potential customers, for the employees, and goods and services. The thriving local tourist industry, driven in large part by thousands of annual visitors to wine country, is dependent upon quality highways. This is out-of-state money, a revenue that's generated by tourists. Quality of life is also an issue. If you take a walk through downtown Newburgh or Dundee and you feel the sidewalk shaking beneath your feet as an 18-wheeler rolls by, or you stand in a crosswalk and have to wait minutes for traffic to stop before you can walk across the street, it definitely drains the quality of how you see life here. So on behalf of the 433 local member businesses and organizations, I hope that you will leave today believing very much that we need a bypass. One other fact that struck me on my way here, the population of Newburgh on the city limits sign is 19,530.
Newburgh?
The estimated traffic flow on 99W is 30,000 cars a day. Now, that would be every woman, child, and man in Newburgh driving a car through the city and then half of them coming back through in a day over a 24-hour period. Congestion's an issue. Quality of life is an issue. The local economy and tourism is an issue. They'll all be served by a better way of transporting people, goods, and services with the bypass. Thank you.
When Dallas grew to Fort Worth, you probably decided that was time to leave. And I don't blame you.
Not a bit.
I don't blame you a bit. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. We're privileged to have the director of ODOT here. I'm so glad Director Warner is here today. So he can't help but hear you.
I've heard him.
Oh, you've already heard him.
Want me to go first?
Which way you want to?
You go first.
In the congestion after our first
you can see it.
I told the story so many times, so I finally came over to see what it was like.
There you go.
Okay, Madam Chair, just want to welcome you guys to Dundee. It's a thrill to have you guys down here. My name's Roland Soles. I founded a winery just down the road here called Argyle.
Saw it when I came.
Yep, nice spot, especially was 18 years ago.
Madam Chair, I've actually tasted it, and it's very good.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
Now we're going to get a competition here.
Actually, I tasted Ponzi's too.
That's funny.
That's why you were late.
You haven't tasted it.
Now we all know why you didn't get here on time.
That's right.
You thought that was water in your bottle. anyway, I don't know what all to say about this place. It's a beautiful place to live. You come from Coos Bay. I'd have to say that the Yamhill County, Dundee in particular, get more bylines and more magazines and more newspapers than any other rural community in the entire state of Oregon. And there's a lot of rural areas that would give their right arm to have that many bylines. And we get all this attention, and we bring people into this county, and they visit other parts of Oregon. They go to Coos Bay. And what do they do? Their first impression is to fly into PDX, beautiful place. They can get on a MAX line, go to downtown Portland, and then after that, it's a struggle. It's worse than seeing salmon going up a stream to get them to come out to wine country. In the wine industry, the wine industry represents $2 billion worth of revenue to this state. $2 billion if you include all of our work, all of our tourism. That's a significant contribution, and it's growing. Only it's going to be constricted by lack of transportation, lack of access to our beautiful part of town here. Dundee itself is unique. We have a hillside, hillside slopes, and within a quarter mile, half a mile of the river. There's no community, I don't think, on the planet that's as potentially as beautiful as this place is. But what happens is we have this giant river of trucks and people and all that kind of stuff going through, and it's not managed. It's not managed well, or right now not manageable. The other thing I guess I represent is, I guess you could call it a, I'm probably going over my minute here. I was thinking about it, I'm almost like representing an endangered species, and the endangered species in this county is the lack of balance, and the lack of balance is between business and residential. There's no community can survive without a balance of both of those, and without proper transportation. You heard the guy from the steel mill. I've been here for 19 years now, and I promise you that the balance was better between business and residential 19 years ago than it is today. Businesses are moving out of Yamhill County, and the reason they're moving out is because they don't have access to markets. They can't get to I-5 to go south. They can't get up to Portland to take their products to town. And you can't get people to come down here and do commerce. If I was a new businessman moving here from Dallas, I wouldn't put my business in Yamhill County, no way, because you don't see a resolution coming to the transportation issues. The second thing, I guess the last thing I'd like to bring up, and the Coos Bay thing brought this to mind, think about folks that live in Lincoln City. Today, if you need to get to market in Portland and you live in Lincoln City, it's atrocious. If no business is going to build in Yamhill County, there's no way they're going to build in Lincoln County. Secondarily, people who live in Lincoln County have limited access to health services. You know, we have a great OHSU. It's a star for Oregon, and it's becoming even more of a star with the development that's going on. But if I lived in Lincoln City and I needed OHSU services, I'd have to take a helicopter to get there, whereas 18 years ago, I could drive there, you know, an hour or less. Today, when they evacuate people, they used to take people by ambulance. Today, they take them by a helicopter. So it's a balance. We talk about commerce and the need to promote jobs. We need people to have a livable space. We have huge potential to bring attention to the nation, and our health and services to our community are all at risk, all because of lack of planning and lack of action. That's my say.
Any questions? Very good testimony.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right.
Hello, Nancy. I'm Nancy Ponzi, and I thank you for coming to Dundee today. Let's see what I can say that Roland did not say. Our family is one of the oldest wineries here in Oregon. He's from Texas, by the way, so that explains.
You're a Texas.
Yeah.
That's right. Representative Nelson, all these Texans.
Okay. I love Texas.
It's a conspiracy. It started some time back. King moved here in 84 from Texas.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're all around.
We're surrounded. Well, I guess that's
a beautiful place. That's right.
That speaks to looking for a beautiful place. And from my perspective of 35 years in the wine business, this business has grown from nothing in 1970 to in excess of 275 wineries now. And this is, everybody uses these phrases, but in fact, Dundee is the center of the wine industry. The Willamette Valley is where the important things are happening, and Dundee is right at the center of it. It's a natural. It's not like making up a destination or a resort. And that's why we moved our business focus from Washington County, which, of course, that's our homeland, and we have 100 acres of vineyards there. But we felt we needed to have a profile here in the heart of it, which we built 5 years ago. This was not a very clever business decision. It was very premature. We knew it, but we wanted to make a statement. And we have, and we've had people love us. They thank us all the time, and they write up the bistro and Dundee and all these beautiful things. But, in fact, the only other development here since that time has been Tina's remodeled their restaurant, and now Rollins expanding his tasting room. There's really nothing happening for the precise reasons that Roland mentioned. You're crazy to put money here. We don't know what's going to happen. If this 99 keeps going, the town will be destroyed. Nobody wants to be here. You can't get in and out of it. So it's a place that is as natural. It's beautiful. The wineries are here. We don't have big box development yet. It has everything going for it. It's like this tremendous asset to the state. Our businesses are fine, so we aren't talking about the health of our businesses. But we're talking about the health of this whole industry and this area itself, the community. And the asset is not being used by the state, all because of this mess out there. So as a longtime member of Thousand Friends, land use advocate, I'm arguing with my friends now because we need this bypass, and I think it can be done very, very well. I don't think it has to ruin things. I think there's some compromises that can be done along the way, and we can make a beautiful bypass and really enhance quality of life.
Thank you, Nancy. That was good testimony, too.
Go ahead.
My name is Wayne Stocks. I am here representing the city of McMinnville on the request of our mayor, Mayor Ed Gormley. First, I'm not sure if I should be addressing you as all y'all or Madam Chair and committee. I'd like to just mirror some of the same sentiments that you've heard already. You're going to hear a lot of these kind of themes repeated through the testimony today, I believe, freight being one of those that's very important. The economic development of McMinnville has been stymied by the lack of a congestion-free or gridlock-free, in this case, corridor to the marketplace, and this being the I-5 corridor or the Portland metropolitan area. The economic diversity of any community is really dependent upon market availability. And that being said, given the ability to get your winery products to any given market that you may need to sell to. Currently, as Cascade Steel has said, 2,300 or 2,400 trucks per month is an enormous amount of traffic pressure on any system. And having to go through a community, there is no way to get from McMinnville to the Portland metro area or to the I-5 corridor currently without going through one of these gridlock areas, whether that's Newburgh-Dundee or if you turn and go down 99W and try to come around through Salem, you hit the gridlock going across the Salem Street Bridge and you end up with the same problem. So as far as the diversity of McMinnville's business community goes, Our industrial promotions area is really hard to attract new businesses, specifically high-tech businesses that are small manufacturing firms that need access and readily available access to their marketplace. So to get our industrial promotions area up to speed, which are higher-paying jobs, which then equates to the livability of McMinnville. Any community can put in lower service kinds of paying jobs, but to attract those kinds of higher paying jobs, you need to be able to market your product. And to do that, you need to be able to ship it. And currently, that's not real feasible from the city of McMinnville. From the livability standpoint, everything they've said about OHSU, getting to OHSU is, on a regular basis, is quite trying. There are certain cultural and other venues that take place in Portland that are not available anywhere else. And if you were to just want to go see a concert at Portland on any given night, you're going to have to plan probably an hour and a half extra to your trip just to get there. McMinnville, currently I plan 2.5 hours just to get to the airport an hour early because of this gridlock. One of the more disturbing things that I've heard recently from newer members of our community is the likening of the Newburgh-Dundee gridlock that's taking place today to some of the more southern states that we have here in communities that have much more serious transportation problems. This area being likened to the gridlock that takes place in the L.A. area specifically. Now, when you start hearing that as a member of the community that's been here since I was a small child, I remember and still have seen to date some of those gridlocks, and I don't see them much differently here. So it really kind of bothered me that kind of characterization is taking place today. So McMinnville would really urge this committee to bring to bear any help you can, pressure or otherwise, towards whoever needs to be moved in the right direction to make this bypass take place and to make it take place in a hurry.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Since you've been here quite a while, at what point, what years, did you begin to see this big change in the gridlock?
I think we've probably seen it just in the last probably 10 years or so, specifically.
I see
it's
a lot
gotten,
of heads nodding that
yeah,
they agree
it's
with
it's gotten
you.
Much, okay. much worse just in the last 2 to 4 years, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
When we first moved to McMinnville, we moved out on a little farm outside of McMinnville. It was up on a hill. You look down at the 18
uh-huh.
from the coast, and on a Sunday, once in a while, maybe once a month, you'd look out there after it got dark at night, and you'd see maybe a quarter-mile string of cars coming down Highway 18 headed toward the Portland metro area. Today, if you do that very same thing, you cannot see the end of the string of cars for both directions, and that from that particular piece of property is approximately 7 miles of highway at any given point on a Sunday. I have seen traffic and have been stuck in that traffic right out here, backed up clear to the way station near McDougal's Corner. I don't know how many miles that is, but it's quite a ways. I have been sitting at the stoplight in Newburgh, waiting to come through Dundee, backed up in this traffic. That just does not bode well for the state of Oregon. It is not the state of Oregon that I grew up in, nor the one that I want to leave to my children.
I suspect that the quality of life, though, for the people in McMinnville, removing the gridlock and the transportation problems, is quite all-American. And very healthy and very happy. So.
Well, McMinnville is a great community, but we are growing. We're growing very fast, and depending on who you talk to, it's anywhere from 2 to 6%, depending on whose figures you're using.
And
so.
Probably depending on who you talk to, whether that's good or bad.
Correct.
All right, any questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
it makes it so much easier on me to have our business leaders tell you what the really problems are. But our next step of the presentation, we're going to talk about the process to find the solution, and basically that's the history. And the three speakers are going to be talking about the community meetings and the history and the surveys and the post-work and the congressional support and the lobbying efforts. First will be Roger Worrell, who is our former mayor and has been a strong, long worker on this bypass. And Ken Austin, who is owner of ADECT and Austin Industries, and I believe one of the largest employers, I'll say, of Yamhill. I think he's the state, maybe United States. But I think he'll clear that up for me. And Dave Hagenberg, which we're hoping, you know, as I testified at the Oregon Transportation Committee, that this bypass can be built before Dave Hagenberg retires. Dave has been the steady constant in this fight to get this bypass. And so I'm honored to ask these three individuals to come forth and speak to you on this subject.
Correct, Dale. Am I going to hear from the people that can tell me why it hasn't been done?
Yes.
Yes, I'll speak to that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome, Roger.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Roger Worrell, as Diane said, former mayor. I had, at one point in my history, and I'll speak to that in my discussion, is known as that around the state capital area and in some of the ODOT reaches as that troublemaker from Dundee. So I'll get to that in my discussion here. About 4 years ago, ODOT started the public outreach meetings. And at that time, we were talking about 8 proposed routes that were under discussion, which eventually grew to something, what was it, Jeff? About 11 or so when we finally made the conclusion. After attending Newburgh's first outreach meeting that ODOT was conducting, the meeting attracted about 30 people. After that, I decided that something more could be done to increase some public or local interest. As a mayor, I was in a unique position to encourage the citizen involvement and to heighten public awareness of in Dundee. I put together an ad hoc team to develop a plan to generate some media interest through press releases. The statements were simply a statement of the dilemma that our town was facing. As more resources or more responses to the press releases came in, more TV coverage was generated, more local news channels occurred, and more local interest on a route selection process developed. When I warned the ODOT team that the expected numbers in the Dundee meeting were going over 100, the individual I was talking to said, well, we never see more than 30 or 40 people at these meetings. That served as a challenge to my ad hoc team. They used the existing route alternative, which is one of the 8 criteria. That is 5 lanes through our downtown area as a worst-case scenario. This coined the rallying cry around the town of, if we do nothing, they're going to run 4 or 6 lanes right through the heart of our town. That got the townspeople excited. And unfortunately, a stop ODOT mentality peaked. The short story of all of this is, at the first meeting, we had more than 400 attendees. I spent more than a little of my time at that meeting pointing out that ODOT was not the enemy here. That 45,000 cars a day, which are the future projections, was the problem. That we needed to work with ODOT as a team to find a solution that we could all live with. since that time, I got on a first-name basis with Jeff Shike and Director Warner and have met with a number of the ODOT team, and we've developed a wonderful relationship. After several more sessions, the results of the Dundee citizens' input were, first of all, no five lanes through downtown Dundee. And you heard that from the wine industry. The rationalization is that, first of all, that's the way Newburgh is today. And Newburgh is broken. The bypass is bypassing their six lanes on their grid system, and it's considered broken. So why spend several million dollars to build a failed solution in Dundee? The second rationale was this corridor wide enough to accomplish these lanes would take out at least half of our downtown business districts. It would impact both the wineries, the nut plant down at the end of the street, demolish my downtown. The second point was choose a route as close to the river as possible. The people in the town are worried about getting our kids back and forth across the highway to the school. The noise generated by the traffic. So these two elements are what I came out of the town meeting with. I took those marching orders to the post that I was representing the city, and those two elements became the major factors of our final route selection and our recommendation to OTC. So that's the history. I used the ODOT people as a scapegoat to help get the interest generated. The interest was absolutely overwhelming. I learned a lesson. Be careful what you wish for. It takes a long time to fix it. So, but I want to reiterate that where we are today is absolutely a textbook solution of how well communities and state agencies can work together. It's been very, very worthwhile.
You know, Roger, it's difficult as well because when there have been suggestions, for instance, of going a bypass around Coos Bay, there's been a huge protest because we have four lanes going through downtown and they don't want people to not go downtown.
Right.
So you see that what ODOT's challenge is in every community, there's something that's totally different than they want. And if you remember, I think it was Lincoln City that was offered a route around, turned it down, and now wishes they had it. So it's, you know, they have to deal with each community and what they want. And so in your case, you would prefer a bypass to trying to enlarge the streets downtown. So.
Well, it's Diane's now, but I used to say, I want to get my town back. We need to have our main street to be a main street. We want the people that's from Lake Oswego with their modular homes on the way to the coast go merrily by and leave us alone. Use an example numbers. I like to think of the town as being 3,000 people. We're a bit shy. There's the U.S. Census thing, and then there's our water bills. You know, they don't jive. But 3,000 people in our town, and today we have 30,000 to 32,000 cars a day. 30 to 32,000 a day coming through here. We just need our town back.
I want to ask Roger one thing, and then I'm going to let Senator Whitsitt, because I just am so curious. Probably everybody in this room could answer it, and I should have found out before I came, but I didn't. And I want to know why Dundee is named Dundee.
It goes back, the history that I have is that the founder came from Scotland.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is okay. That correct, Evelyn?
Okay. Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with the name, so and I'm so glad you told me why. Senator Whitsitt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, what was the date of that meeting when you had 400 people?
I'm going to have to defer that back to Jeff. I'm not sure. Is he gone?
March or April 2001, Roger.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was thinking it was in the 2000 time frame. But it was 4 years ago.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Let's continue.
Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for being here. And I've asked to speak of history, and I think, okay, where do we start? And let me start by telling you my father was born in Newburgh, and my grandfather came out when there was about 18 to 20 people living in Newburgh. And my dad tells that the story is that Newburgh was a little muddy street, and if you look at the picture behind you, you'll see Main Street of Dundee. Now, the only difference between that picture and today is they paved it. And that is the truth, because this is a restriction, and it's been a restriction in the system.
Yes.
It all funnels down into two lanes. Now, in 1972, I was on Newburgh City Council as a council member, and I went down to Salem and helped with our highway people and street people to testify that we needed a bypass. There was no money for a bypass. So it was suggested, Glenn Jackson was head of the commission at that time, and Glenn Jackson said, we were asking for relief in that restriction, and that's how Newburgh got a one-way grid. So we got two lanes of traffic, one eastbound and one westbound. And I don't know if I should tell you this or not, but it was said by Glenn Jackson, if you people do that, you will not get a bypass. Now, I don't know if that is still in the minds of people in Salem from 1972 to 2004. I hope it's not.
Probably not, because they term limited a lot of them out.
but the history might be there. So I would just like to tell you that you know, I hear people talk about the congestion, and I bet if you people go to have these town meetings and all, you'll hear this from city after city after city. But one of the things that is geographically a problem in this area, I'm very similar to the coast routes, but if you look at the other map up there on the background, Newburgh was built clear to the river way, way back in the 30s. The mill was down by the river. You couldn't go down by that mill property. That was a large mill down along the river. So there wasn't a way to skirt around Newburgh. And as a high school student, I witnessed the city council and the people trying to deal with bypass, and it was laid out on maps and charts clear back in my high school days in the 1940. I went to high school in 1945. And what I did see as a young student and a young person is one day my folks are talking about they're doing something in Tigard between Newburgh and Portland. There was something happening. And we witnessed them going around Tigard. They had to build an overpass to get over the railroad track. But they took the congestion off of downtown Tigard. And then years went on, and pretty soon they worked on the road from Tigard through Sherwood, or what we call Six Corners. And in 1950, I was a student at Oregon State, and I took a job with Tektronix and commuted. And my mother was furious that you would drive to Portland. And I said, Mom, it's no problem. You know, my 39 Ford did just fine on that. It was four lanes. And we watched and witnessed how they improved the highway all the way to the east end of Newburgh. And that's where I go back to my city council time. It was blocked at Newburgh. And if this hearing was in the 70s, Newburgh was as much of a restriction as Dundee. So I think everybody has been in favor of trying to do something about this restriction for years and years and years. For some reason, the state or the whoever is involved has come along and says, we've got more important places, or there's more noise made by other people. Well, Joanna's here with me, and I apologize for my dress because I'm working at a swap meet in Portland. I drove out here this afternoon for this, and I'm going to go back and sell some more old car parts. And they're all greasy, and I my hands are greasy, and I told Joanna, I'm not going to change to come out here. But
no way.
But
that's right.
I'm just as muddy as those streets. But in 1964, my wife and I started a little business in our hometown. We were living in Denver and came back to Newburgh. When I went to high school, the population was 3,500. When we started our business, it was about 5,000. And never expected it to grow. Today, we employ 800 people and work in Newburgh. We employ, or more, about 850, a total employment of 1,000 people worldwide. And what's really interesting is it's, I could say we're not bothered like some of these other people about shipping our products because the road has been improved from Newburgh to Portland. There's going to be congestion no matter where you go in this state, but that's okay. We have to live with it, and it's better than California. But what really concerns me and hurts me is that our employees are witnessing, and this is what our secretary, who lives in MacMinnville, says. She adds 5 minutes per year since she's worked for the company to take to get to work. Living in MacMinnville, her commute time from her home, which is 15 miles, to her job is almost 1 hour. And, you know, there's people leave us because simply they say, I would rather work someplace where I could get commute in a less way. Newburgh is hurt for housing. There hasn't been real good housing, and so it's not attracting people. All of our vice presidents and people like that of the higher level, of economic level, have chosen to live in Beaverton and that area. So, but having those people living in our community would enhance our city council, our school boards, and things of that nature, where it's real important. So the time that people take to get there, and I bring you that history as a city council member, as growing up here, starting a business here, and then seeing this bottleneck west of Newburgh, and what every one of these people say about the traffic. You got the casino traffic, you got the steel mill traffic. That's good. Those are jobs, and it's part of the economic picture. So I thank you for hearing my historical perspective of the need of this.
Well,
of this bypass.
It was good to have all of you here today, and Dave is going to tell us a few more things that we need to know.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. In 1986 or 7, and going back, Senator Starr, you're talking about that far back and looking at transportation. Then Congressman Acoin was in MacMinnville, and he was dedicating a new extension to the MacMinnville Airport, and he said, David, what do you see as the most significant problem with respect to the economy of this region? And I said, it isn't here yet, Congressman Acoin, but I'll tell you what it will be, and it will be Newburgh and Dundee. And as Ken testified, nothing was happening, and there was no sense that anything could happen to deal with the transportation problem. And so I started coming up and meeting with business people in Newburgh, and I'll tell you what I told then. It's 1988, and in 10 years you will be drowning in traffic. And it will take heaven only knows how many more years if we don't get started to find a solution. I didn't realize it was going to be a lifetime avocation, but it's a fact. Newburgh and Dundee are literally drowning in traffic. And so we started the process of thinking as a community, what could we do to move a project forward that really had very little support anywhere except in Newburgh and Dundee and in the greater Yamhill County area? And we started having meetings, and the first meeting that I recall was in 1988, and we had almost 400 people at the MacMinnville Community Center responding to a call to talk about what could we do with this pending problem. At that time, the Yamhill County Board of Commissioners decided that they had some guy by the name of Dave Hogberg running loose, working on a project that ought to have something to do with the governmental entities, and so they created what is called the Yamhill County Parkway Committee, and they made me chair of that and said I could get off of it when I got done. And so don't worry, Mayor Ragsdale, I'm around for a while. But so and just in terms of the history, we then started doing surveys and reconnaissance studies on how could you find a route and build a facility that would accommodate a lot of different concerns. And let me tell you, truly, what I told the people of MacMinnville is you want to get around Newburgh and Dundee as fast as you can. But Newburgh and Dundee don't want you in their downtown, but they don't want you to destroy their city as you get around them. And so we named that committee the Parkway Committee with a particular idea in mind. And you've seen parkways in the east, and you've seen how some of them can be designed that fit with the geography and will fit with the community. And we have made a pledge to do that, and we'll talk a little later about a thing called context-sensitive design. But for now, it's important to understand that that was a critical part of everybody deciding. In order to provide a solution, it had to be one that worked for everybody. And you heard Nancy Ponzi talk about the issue of 1,000 friends and how do we design a facility which we desperately need in a way that takes into account our own natural environment and human environment. And we made a pledge at that time that we would all work together and we would take into consideration the needs of all the different constituencies as we go forward on a project. That was key to bringing a consensus together, and you'll hear more about that consensus of people, and it's enormous. It also did one other thing.
that was what was important to ODOT in saying, we can now go to work on a project where we have a consensus with the community rather than getting mired into a project where no one can agree either do you want it or what do you want.
Right.
So very critical. As a part of that, we had to talk about different routes. I won't go through all the different routes, but there were about 8 or 9 different routes and permeations of those routes that were discussed until we came down to the route that's on the board. And it's on that farm map, and Madam Chair and committee members, it is the Phase 1, Phase 2, Phase 3, and you'll hear a little more about phasing, but that whole 11-mile stretch is what gets you around Newburgh and Dundee, and in the event we need to build it in phases, we have as a community agreed that the first phase would be the one that gets around Dundee. And I will tell you, as a part of the process, that Newburgh is supportive of that, although you can imagine everybody would like it to go around your town first, but we all realize that the Dundee is the first critical choke point we have to address, and we need to start buying critical right away in phases 2 and 3, because as you can see in the aerials, those rights of way start to disappear. And it is important to the committee to know how critical timing is in this whole project. If we just wait long enough, we won't have a route and it won't be an issue. It'll be moot. So
every once in a while, I think that we've lost all the discussion about the common good. You have just reinforced my faith in humanity that Newburgh is going to be supportive, because that's looking at it from the common good.
Isn't that extraordinary?
It is extraordinary. I have to tell you.
And I can tell you that the leadership of Mayor Stewart has just been critical of that, and I wish he could have been here today, but he has been, as well as the prior mayors, a real force in this. A little bit more about the process, what we've done. Mayor Worrell talked about the post, and you know, you can come up with all kinds of thoughts about what a post is, but it really stands for the Policy Oversight Steering Team, and this has been a key part of why this project has moved forward as it has. The Policy Oversight Steering Team is made up of the mayors of McMinnville as a designated person, the mayor of Dundee, the mayor of Newburgh, Commissioner Lewis, myself, Representative Nelson, and ODOT has a representative, Federal Highway has a representative, Land Conservation Development Commission has a representative. So you get an idea of all of these, and that is the committee that finally decided on the route and how you would resolve a lot of these issues and the recommendation to the Transportation Commission on what worked for a community. And that group also has worked very well. I don't know if ODOT has ever had a time before when they've said they were willing to pass out that kind of responsibility to a committee which they did not control. I mean, this committee was one person from ODOT who did their job very well, but all these other constituencies, and that has been a key part of moving a major transportation process forward. So then we looked at the issues of how do you fund this, and you'll hear a lot more about it, but Congresswoman First was a key to this project. When she was in office, she asked me what could she do to help, and I said, we need some money to start the first environmental study. Many of you may remember Tony Meeker was a state senator. Tony told me, David, he said, the toughest job you will have is to get the first $1 million. And Representative First, yes, and it's true, Representative First got a federal earmark of $375,000. Yamhill County put up $150,000. Newburgh, Dundee, McMinnville put up their own money. Private people, the Austins, put up their own money. ODOT then, seeing that we had a lot of money coming forward, put up some more money, and that's how we started the environmental work that was so critical of this project. And it all started because the people of this area are just, they will not give up. They are determined to solve this problem. So we did that. We also then realized, and I was meeting with Congressman Wu, and he said, David, you really need a bigger presence in Washington, D.C., because you need to have federal funding, and you need to have it on a major scale. And I said, Congressman, tell me, what would you recommend? He said, get a lobbyist. And he was just straightforward on that. So each year, the Parkway Committee raises between $90,000 and $100,000, thanks to the cities and our friends who have put up those dollars, other private industries and enterprises, to hire a very, very effective lobbyist so that we have a presence in Washington, D.C., in order to help go forward on this project. And we can talk a little later about the funding efforts, but those have been critical. And what I will tell you is that we have raised through and ODOT's been right there with us, putting up money in their STIP, and on the federal level, we're at between $13 and $15 million so far. The earmark, the 6-year reauthorization bill in Congress, is that $11 million on the House side for this project. About 10 of us, including the Austins and the mayors, the president of Linfield College, and a number of others, went back to Washington 2 weeks ago and met with all of our delegation. And we're hoping that on the Senate side and the conference committee, we can really increase those dollars some more. The next person is going to talk is going to go right on into it on our local level, but I'll let Mayor Ragsdale bring up the next one, and you're going to hear about tolling and all of our efforts.
All right, Dave, don't leave. Let me be sure. Are there any questions?
And I'm going to be back before this is done. So.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Is there a question? Yeah, I would ask just one thing.
Okay, too. Senator Whitson.
Mr. Austin, you said that this started 33 years ago, 1972. In your mind, has it been a lack of responsiveness from the ODOT, or has it been a inability of a community to decide where they wanted the bypass, or has it been environmental issues? What has caused it to spend a third of a century to get to where we are today?
Well, I would say that it's probably gone on with my seeing drawings on by realtors on maps of where a proposed bypass should be and then how some of the subdivisions or development around Newburgh should be. I would say that it's gone on well over 50 years. What Newburgh has lacked, and this is my hometown I'm talking about, but Newburgh has been a bedroom community, a small farm community, its whole life. People came to Newburgh and had small acreages, prunes, black caps, berries, and some of the larger farms were 30, 40 acres. Go down to McMinnville, which was the county seat, and the leadership and of our county was down, and we're at the west end of the county, excuse me, the east end of the county. And I always felt, even as a high school student, and I don't know why, I felt we lacked leadership in our community. We lacked a strong voice. The town was divided and kind of mixed. There's 34 churches in Newburgh today, 32 denominations. When we pray together, we play together. So you couldn't, there just was no way to try to get a thing going. As a high school student, I wanted to see a youth center. And went out and worked and raised money by selling subscriptions to the Graphic, which is a local paper. And the mayor said, you can't have a youth center because there's going to be billiards and there's going to be these things. And he condemned the building we rented. So it doesn't take much to stop a project. Newburgh was known when I was a young kid, we don't want this to be a lunchbox town. We don't want BP John to come out and build a factory here. And as a city councilman, when Joanne and I started a business, I read mail and I was absolutely appalled. They didn't want our business in the town of Newburgh. So what I think, there's the church factor. I'm a trustee at George Fox University today, but the people at George Fox were very content with the little Quakerville that existed. And my grandfather was married to the Quakers. And so I think Newburgh is historically conservative. And so a bypass, they were there before 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I mean, they just didn't want to see any of this happen. And it didn't take much local voice to say, no bypass. And what I read was that there was a group forum called ECHO, East County Homeowners Association, that was opposed to Joanne and I building. We bought 22 acres of land to build our first building on. And we have a large factory. We have over 600,000 square feet of manufacturing space. Produce 70 dental chairs a day. We are the largest dental chair manufacturer in the world. And defy all of those things. Would I come to Newburgh under these conditions? I don't think I would. But this is my home. So, and I'm happy, I think, that the people are in favor of it today, but you could not get a voice that would go to Salem or even talk about it. When Senator Hatfield was governor, and Governor Hatfield came to Newburgh, and that was the year, it was 1966, and we said, you know, that how can we get better transportation in Newburgh? And as the years went on and got to know him better, I said, is there any way that if we put several million dollars into the pool, I told Mike Holloran that when he was a highway commissioner, was what could we do to encourage us in the town? And nothing has really when Dave is the guy that has pulled it together, Dave and Leslie and all of the people that are out working, it took a lot of work, a lot of hard work to overcome this negative. That's a long answer to a short question, but...
And 32,000 cars a day through town.
Yeah, it's...
Thank you.
And is the this is the Austin family business. They do many other wonderful things.
But, well, thank you.
Yes, we were very appreciative of having you and Joanne. And I don't know if you remember me, but I remember you. And we've met before, but very fortunate to have people like you.
Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
Thank you.
You would appreciate this. You know, as mayor of Dundee, I didn't realize how much time it would take, you know, to be mayor. But what I am finding is that I spend 50% of my time on the bypass. And many of these people spend much more time. The next segment that we're going to be talking about is actions over the last few years. And I'm going to ask Leslie Lewis, who, again, is the commissioner of Yamhill County, and she also served in the state legislature. She's going to be talking about the tolling legislation and projects of statewide significance. I'm asking Mike Sherwood, who resides here in Dundee, who is our chairman of our planning commission, to talk about our Dundee transportation plan. I've asked Bob Andrews, a council president of Newburgh, to talk about the Newburgh transportation plan. And I've asked Mike Ragsdale to talk about the Dundee refinement plan, which we do have copies for you to take with you. And also, again, I'm asking Dave Hagenberg to come back to talk about more of the organized community support. So with that.
Thank you, Mayor Ragsdale. Madam Chair, committee members, Representative Nelson, Representative Thatcher, it's a pleasure to be here today. I'm Leslie Lewis, and as Mayor Ragsdale said, I am one of the three Yamhill County commissioners. The commissioners divide themselves up with liaison responsibilities, and when I became a commissioner 4 years ago, I wanted to stay working on this project, the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass, because I've been working on this since the early 90s and when I ran for the legislature. And Mayor Ragsdale said we talk about some of the things that have been happening the last few years. This actually goes back a little over 10 years ago when I first met Dave Hagenberg and the Yamhill County Parkway Committee. You asked earlier, Madam Chair, why hasn't this project moved forward? And a number of people have talked about historically things that have happened in Newburgh, but really leadership coalesced around this project really with the formation of the Yamhill County Parkway Committee in the late 80s. And it's been clear, absolutely clear, by everyone in the community and in the larger community, Yamhill County, that this project has been needed desperately. So why, if we've been working since 1988 or 87 when Dave started the Parkway Committee, why hasn't this project moved forward? And I think obviously there's a lot of work to do with environmental and land use, and we'll talk about that later, but the major reason a project of this magnitude has not moved forward is funding and the lack of availability of state funds. And so in 1994, in an effort, and Senator George, welcome.
Hi, everybody.
Okay. In 1994, in an effort to get this project moving ahead, as Dave Hagenberg mentioned, they'd been working on a reconnaissance study with ODOT, and it just became really clear to the Yamhill County Parkway Committee that the state of Oregon did not have the funds to build this project. And at the time, it was assumed to be roughly an $80 to $100 million project. I can tell you today that the numbers, if you were to look in our draft EIS, you would see numbers in the $200 million range. But today, ODOT says the number is $310 to $350 million. So in slightly over 10 years, the price of the project has more than tripled, or the estimates for it. But anyway, back in 1994, we knew we couldn't get $80 to $100 million out of ODOT. And so the Parkway Committee, led by Dave Hogeberg, made kind of a nationwide search of how do other areas fund projects. And, of course, tolling came back as one of the answers. And the Parkway Committee used some of these experts in tolling from around the nation and drafted what became Senate Bill 626. This bill actually, for those of you that have been recently in the legislature, you know about Senate Bill 772. We'll talk about that later. If you want to really think about the predecessor to Senate Bill 772, it was 626 in the 1995 session. And we had many innovative concepts in that bill. We talked about public-private partnerships and the ability of the private sector to be involved in toll projects. We talked about design-build in that bill. We talked about the ability to do environmental streamlining. And Senator Prozanski was a representative. It was his first session and my first session. And in the 1995 session, Senate Bill 626 was supported by the entire Yamhill-Kaling delegation. Senator Shannon and Senator Bunn worked on it very hard on the Senate side. On the House side, Representative Milne and I were the lead people for that bill. The original bill that we brought to the legislature would have applied statewide. But frankly, the state of Oregon in 1995 was not ready. Many of the representatives and senators were not ready to think about tolling to build roads. And so on the Senate side where the bill started, they said, well, if Newburgh and Dundee wants tolling, we'll let you guys have tolling, but we don't want the rest of the state to do it. So the bill left the Senate with only one project authorized for tolling, this project. In the House, Representative Brian, who now chairs Washington County Commission, said he wanted to add a project, which is the Tualatin Sherwood Parkway, which Senator Starr knows very well. So the bill left the legislature that session with two projects statewide authorized for tolling. We did do a feasibility study after the 1995 session. The feasibility study showed that for both projects, ours and the one in Washington County, the tolling would perhaps only pay 40 to 50% of the project. And so what started out as euphoria on our side to have completed getting this tolling bill going, it got dampened a little bit because the state still said to us, we don't have a way to pay for the rest of it. So they basically told us we were stuck. As you all know by now, many other projects were added onto the toll bill from the 1995 session. And in 2001, a major effort was made to change that. And I'll talk later about Senate Bill 772. But what has happened is we have seen state dollars shrink that are available for modernization projects, not just for our project, but for all of the capacity-improving projects in the state. The state dollars have been shrinking, and the needs have been going up. More and more people are now beginning to see the need for the innovative financing, which was brought about originally by Senate Bill 626. I also want to talk a little bit about projects of statewide significance, because you probably know that this is one of the eight projects of statewide significance. I serve on the Mid-Willamette Valley Area Commission on Transportation. Mayor Ragsdale serves on that commission as well. As you know, the state is divided up into area commissions on transportation, and these commissions are supposed to help pick modernization projects, among other things, that then are forwarded up to the region and then from there forwarded up to the Oregon Transportation Commission. When I first got onto MWAC in 2001, our act was dealing with the scarcity of modernization funds, as were the other acts in Oregon. And we made it quite clear to the region the problem that we were having, because every act has major projects like Newburgh-Dundee and has an inability to figure out how to fund them. And so our concerns got all the way up to the Oregon Transportation Commission, and in May 2002, they created a list called Projects of Statewide Significance, and we are one of the eight projects on that list. Later that year, in December of 2002, at the Governor's Economic Summit, the Economic Summit also endorsed that list of eight projects, and one of the things they said in their white paper is that through innovative financing that might include tolls, earmarked federal funds, and state highway funds, complete the eight projects of statewide significance identified in the statewide transportation investment plan. So that whole body, the governor's economic summit, said these eight projects need to get done. They're priorities for livability and for the economy. The OTIA 3 funding, as you know from serving on the Transportation Committee last year and Senator Starr's efforts, that funding did include specific dollars for projects of statewide significance. I'm sad to say, however, Newburgh-Dundee only received $2.5 million out of that pot of $100 million. So you asked why we're stalled, and we'll talk later about public-private partnership because we think that's going to help us move forward, but largely the reason we've been stalled is for funding.
Commissioner, why do you think that? Did you agree at the time that the tolling would only pay for half?
I thought the feasibility study was very conservatively done. And I think because we were embarking on something new, that we needed to do something conservative initially. I still felt that when you were talking about an $80 to $100 million project, bringing in a source of funding that would provide $40 to $50 million was of great value to the state of Oregon. Otherwise, the state of Oregon would have to find that $40 to $50 million themselves. So I think what we all thought is it is a public-private partnership, that you will need public funds along with private funds. I do believe, and as I said, we'll talk about it later, but I believe Senate Bill 772 has significantly expanded the opportunity for the private sector to participate, and that instead of looking at partial funding from the private sector, we may in fact be looking at the ability to fund the project almost in total from the private sector. I still believe the state needs to step up to the plate. This is their highway, and I think they need to step up to the plate and make more dollars available for this project. But I am very hopeful that public-private will help us a great deal.
Any questions, either commissioner?
Who's next? Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Mike Sherwood. I was a member of the Transportation System Plan Committee, and I'm presently the chair of the Dundee Planning Commission. So Mayor Eggsdale asked me to talk a little bit about the history of the Transportation System Plan. So Dundee has had a community developed vision statement, which is here on the board behind you. We spent several years developing that vision statement. But our vision was to have ourselves as we view ourselves as the center of the wine industry. We had a city that had bicycle and pedestrian paths that would take you from the hillside all the way down to the riverside, where you could safely cross the highway on foot. And you can navigate around the city as well as through, and a place where both business and people would be able to thrive. That was part of our vision statement. With the development of huge parcels of our agricultural land to the east of the city that are in the urban growth boundaries, going to develop in the next couple of years, as well as the eventual development of probably the largest untouched portion of the Willamette River within a city boundaries, we knew we needed a plan, a transportation plan. So in the year 2000, the City of Dundee, in conjunction with the Department of Transportation, Oregon Department of Transportation, initiated a study of the systems, the transportation systems for the city. So it's rare that a city of 5,000 people has a transportation system plan, but with the bottleneck for Highway 99, the pending bypass, and a myriad of transportation problems, the FACENS, a group of citizens, along with ODOT and Kittleson Associates, put together, embarked on a plan. It took us about 2 years to do. So we looked at arterial roads and connected streets, public transportation, pedestrian and bicycle plans, financing alternatives, and policy and ordinances to implement those. So, and we put together a very nice plan with that. We conducted 4 public meetings where we gained valuable input at critical points along the way to refine that plan. We had 2 meetings with the Planning Commission and 2 meetings with the City Council. And the result was a really pretty incredible map that we'll be using for the next 20 years on how transportation is going to go within the city of Dundee. So Dundee is at a crucial point in our history. You know, solving the cities and the region's transportation problem is critical not only to the residents of Dundee and Yamhill County, but I believe to the citizens of Oregon as well. So we thank you for coming to hear our problems and witness what we have to say. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Mike. That's good. I'm very appreciative of people serving on planning commissions.
Yeah.
That's a huge commitment, I'll tell you. All right, who's next?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, committee members. Senator George, Representative Thatcher, Representative Nelson, it's good to have you here. Thank you, first of all, from Newburgh, is it happens to be one of our biases on our council to have government as much as it possibly can be open to the public. We have instituted a practice of having progressively more hearings in our own businesses, and it's a delight to see our state government coming out to the people. So we thank you on that. I don't have much to add in areas of the bypass other than to ratify the comments that were made about we do endorse the phasing of the program. That makes it more workable in the long run. We've enjoyed and are enjoying being a full and active partner in the efforts to get the bypass. But I would like to stress that, and this is both the comments as it deals with the bypass and as I talked just briefly about the proposed transportation system plan that we're working on now, are issues of safety, livability, and environment. Now, the environment is noise pollution, it's air pollution, and believe it, the comments that were made earlier by our chamber president, the vibratory concerns that we have in downtown Newburgh when some of the commercial transportation goes through, there is literally vibrations going on. And, of course, congestion.
Could I tell you that we had an earthquake, a very mild one, and I was going to speak at a group, and the thing was doing this, and I said, you know, I think we're having an earthquake. And they said, oh, no, that's the trucks going through.
I rest our case. Thank you very much.
That's right.
Madam Chair, the same situation is occurring in downtown Redmond, where they have trucks going through, and it's rattling the mortar out of the brick buildings there, and they're in the process of a bypass.
Is that right?
So
I didn't know that.
Common problem. We've got to trust.
It is a dynamic subject. One of the side things that I want to talk about is we look at the bypass, and it breaches in or is a segue into our transportation plan, is the primarily the area of safety, but with it comes congestion. Our commercial transportation is pretty much locked into Highway 99. But we have experienced, we continue to experience in Newburgh, a great deal of our commuters going through our neighborhoods. They're leaving 99 and they're going through the neighborhoods. Oh, yeah. This is creating congestion on streets that were not designed to handle them, either in capacity or safety or anything else. I've also, anecdotally, I noticed that we have a great number of people using now county roads to get around Dundee. I know your Full Quartz Road gets a great deal of activity here in Dundee. We have the Fox Farm Road and others where people are now congesting in those areas that were not designed to handle those. We're working on that. And through the progress of the the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, that will alleviate a good share of that. Newburgh is working right now on a transportation plan. We're calling it our Newburgh Transportation System Plan of 2005. And it's a product in motion, or a work in progress, if I may. There have been numerous public hearings by our planning commission, and the commission has deliberated on all of the information, has passed on to the city council now recommendations, which the city council will in turn we're beginning our initial hearings, will be on starting Monday, the 4th of April, and the final decision is yet to be there pending city council review and deliberations. But the proposed transportation system plan includes a new highway, Oregon Highway 99 intersection at Wilsonville Highway, trying to eliminate that congestion there where Wilsonville, Springbrook, 219, the St. Paul-Newburgh Highway, if you wish, some people call it that, and Sandoz Road, which goes across on the other side. And then there are discussions about a future routing of Oregon Highway 219 in addition to that intersection. There are street improvement plans. Now, there are two types of street improvement plans, one for capacity and one are non-capacity. There's a number of retro activities, retrograde or retrofits that need to happen as Newburgh has kind of, in a sense, outgrown itself. But street improvement plans including street design standards, collector and arterial standards, and other structural standards that we need to do. We're looking at alternative routing through traffic in our historic downtown area. There are the pros and the cons, and those will be worked on. In our traffic transportation system plan, we have issues dealing with traffic control and traffic calming devices. That will be coming up, and there will be a great deal of dialogue on traffic calming, as you may have experienced in your own local communities. Sidewalks, curbs, bikes, and pedestrian issues. The standards, locations, and applications are part of that transportation system plan. With the advent of the bypass, and we're looking at it as there will be an advent, we think it's coming, we're looking at various frontage roads and access routes for the river area, there is a separate development plan that Newburgh has for riverfront development to assure that there will be riverfront access as well as there will be frontage when other areas get cut off with the bypass. Recommendations that are coming for improvements in our transportation for the city of Newburgh and deal with also public transportation, bicycle pedestrian systems, air service, rail service, and pipeline transportation. It's a 20-year program that we're looking at in that area. We're looking at trying to identify various funding sources. One of the biggest costs that we're looking at in this transportation plan, of course, is the Newburgh-Dundee Transportation Improvement Plan. And Commissioner Lewis has already alluded to that. We're looking at a beginning figure, today's beginning figure, of an area of $300 million. We have non-capacity improvements in the area of $46 million, capacity improvements are in the area of $52 million. We see sources in here. ODOT is a source, so we're looking to you as ways of helping to break those dollars loose. We would be looking and partnering with Yamhill County on some of those areas that are outside the city, even outside of our UGB. We're looking to the developers that are coming in. There has been, and Mr. Austin is very correct, there has been a very strong shortage of the housing that is needed to support any development of commerce in Newburgh. But that's beginning to grow now, and we would be looking to developers to begin to bear part of this burden. And then we, of course, would be looking at our own property taxes in the city of Newburgh to be funding some of that. The plan also has a prioritizing of the projects and the various activities. That basically concludes my remarks. If I remain available, if there are any questions.
Bob, you were talking about the access roads in your transportation plan that involve the city's plan. Is that connected in some way to the bypass plan?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
If I may enlarge on that.
Yes, I wish you would.
You've seen the bypass map over here, and as we look at that area and that arch, there is a plan for riverfront development. And what we're working with in our transportation system, as well as in partnership with ODOT, is to assure access probably at grade with some adjustments in the bypass grade. We're working towards at grade crossings or bypassing either under or over, but at our grade in order to access those areas. That would also apply to some areas adjacent to the east side, and the frontage roads would be where they would be closing off some of Highway 99, and we would need some access for some of our residences and some businesses, particularly our new hospital in there. There may be some need there for some access. They right now have a new intersection being built, Providence Road for Providence Hospital, that will come off of 99, but there may be some other needs in there for that. But those are the frontages and accesses, which will have to be discussed. It's not firmed up. It's not written in concrete as yet. It's a very dynamic subject right at this point.
But a very, very important one.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, I see the bypass in a lot of ways as not just moving traffic, it's economic development as well. And then I see your riverfront development is that part of keeping that natural environment in Oregon that we don't want to lose. So there is a beautiful balance there, and that's extremely important before anybody does anything, that everybody can agree that that's going to be maintained. So thank you for that. Any questions about? All right. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You talk about your community transportation system plan. That sounds very ambitious. Can you talk about whether or not you have the resources to accomplish that? You talked about tapping into developers and business interests and those kind of things. But based on your available resources that the city has today, can you give us an idea of the gap, maybe?
If I may, Madam Chairman, Senator Starr, this is, again, a 20-year project that we're looking at. It won't all be done at once any more than we look at the bypass being here, the breaking, you know, shovel-ready tomorrow. Yes, as I indicated, we're looking to ODOT for some of those resources, particularly on those areas that fit in and are part of their transportation system. There are areas in our UGB and outside the UGB that we would be looking to partnering with Yamhill County on. And we would be, as I said, looking at developers. And then internally, we look at a bill of over $12 million that would be going to our landholders, our property taxes, or some other fee mechanism that would be approved by the city in order to accomplish that. So, yes, that's part of the plan, is identifying those and then suggestions on how to begin to implement those. Thank you for coming.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Excuse me, but I have to go, but I need to ask, I want everybody to know what occurred in 2001. And since now Senator Starr and Senator Berger served with me, and Senator George was our counterpart on the other side in the Transportation Committee as the chair, we were able to achieve what in revenue for modernization? Is it $500,000? $500 million?
Yeah, it was $400 million in the 2001 session, and then an additional $100 million in bonding capacity in the special session, the first special session.
And the reason this is important is because in the committee, what we have to have support for is what we call legislative intent. And as Senator Berger and Senator Starr knows, the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, which we worked so hard on, as Senator Starr used to say, there's nobody in the capital that doesn't know where Yamhill County is, and I always appreciated that. That's how hard we work. But if you get a board in the if you get a ruling board that does not support legislative intent of a mission, this is what happens. Mm-hmm. And so this bypass got the shaft, okay? We all agree. I want everybody to understand that, because I always often get hit with working on an interim solution, but the reason
is because it's happening. And what I'm simply trying to do is to make these routes safer that people are now taking until we get this public partner, private partnership or whatever we do. So then in the next legislature, and this is for the four, three here who do not know this, what did we do?
Last session?
Yes, sir.
Last session we did OTA 3, which was $2.5 billion for bridges primarily. Okay.
So now this is almost, you know, $3 billion for, you know, modernization and for bridges, okay? And then in the ODOT budget, that was divided up. But what now we understand is, and this is what I would just want to be explained, because I need y'all to explain it, because if I have to one more time, it's going to make me insane. There is this excess money that is not needed for these bridges now, and I want to know why in the Yam Hill we can't have it here for this bypass. And since we've got ODOT here, our top economic advisor, I would like to know why can't we get some help? This is over 50 years old. We're in the heart of the top five tourist attractions in this state. You know what they are? Okay, Wine Country, Spirit Mountain, Spruce Goose, Portland, and the coast. My gosh, I mean, what more do we want? And it's a tremendous economic opportunity, but instead of building on that, we've lost, you know, five of our largest businesses because they can't move freight. And just this week, we recommended in Trade and Economic Development that they have everybody but somebody on transportation, you know, represented in that commission. We said, get them in there. It's the number one need in the state. Hope they put Bruce Warner on it. You know, maybe something will happen. But I just want to know, you know, while Bruce Warner's here, Tom's here, can we have some of that bridge money now to move this forward so this entire area does not die? And in the event of an emergency happening in Portland or on the coast, these people have a safety route to safety. Could we get that answer?
Sure. I think that I said just a little bit ago to, I think, Mayor Ragsdale, am I going to have somebody that's going to tell me why it can't happen? Because I think in fairness to committee hearings, you always want to hear that other side from the table. And I think if you don't, you've wasted a certain amount of strategic time. So.
Well, I feel bad for Senator Whitson, who's missed this for the last 6 years. I mean, we have, you know, all pounded, you know, the pavement and on everybody to make this happen. So I wish we could hear it from ODOT now. May we access those excess funds?
Let's hear from Mike, and then I'll have them come up.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for your interest in our project, and I think we'd like to talk about this subject at the end of our presentation. Maybe we've spent too much time on telling you our history and what we've done, but let us complete that, because our last section is to talk about future funding and solutions. This vision has been adopted by the city, and the city council, unlike many in the state and the nation, are actually trying to implement this vision. And the first words...
Did you give your name?
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I think I did, but I'm Mike Ragsdale. Okay. I'm a citizen of Dundee. I've been the chairman of the citizen task force that developed the transportation system plan. Subsequent to that, the mayor would not let me retire, and I became the chairman of the citizen task force that developed the refinement plan, and I'm also a member of the Parkway Committee.
Thank you.
That vision starts out with in the year 2022. So what they've done is they've stood in the future and looked back to see what they can do. And when we did the transportation system plan, what we recognized is we could not deal, as we were looking at the local streets, the arterials, the collectors, the future development of the undeveloped portion along the river, we could not deal adequately with Highway 99. So Highway 99 in the transportation system plan, which was a huge project in itself, was set aside with some language that says we will proceed ahead and develop a refinement plan for Highway 99, which this future statement calls for Dundee now has its own local street, and it's called Highway 99. So as subsequent to the transportation system plan, with a significant assistance from ODOT, they funded the consultants that were less necessary to do the work. The transportation system plan, the transportation task force, continued on with its work and developed a refinement plan. And I apologize for the lack of copies. We do not have adequate number of color copies printed. We'll leave you plenty of black and white copies. But what we did in the transportation refinement plan is we looked at Highway 99 and we accepted as a given the city council's mandate that we would not accept the solution for the transportation problems as a widening of Highway 99, but rather the bypass would exist. That's adopted in the transportation system plan. And we looked at what do we need to do to turn this product, this Highway 99, into a main street. And so the transportation system plan is further work that the city of Dundee has done. It's not completely adopted. It's only been forwarded by the task force. We'll be going to the Planning Commission hearing soon that talks about all the land use modifications, all of the design modifications that are necessary to turn that into a main street. We participated with the citizens to make decisions that we will have a certain location that will be the town center. And we deemed that from that cross street on Highway 99 for several blocks, we would have a land use category that would have retail at the sidewalk rather than parking in front. And then as we went in both directions towards a rural area, we would step down in intensity and density, and we would get to traditional strip retail, and then eventually we would get to highway retail, and then we would be in the rural area. So we thought very carefully about the design of the community, spent many hours and had great consultant work, and had huge citizen public meetings to arrive at this refinement plan. I bring this to your attention because it shows the commitment the city has to the future when there is a bypass. And this cannot occur. We will simply, as you've heard from many witnesses, we will die as a city if the bypass cannot occur. But as it occurs, we have a refinement plan in place. But also what we looked at is a best-case scenario. Private public works, we get somebody that takes over a private responsibility for doing all this. It's still a number of years away before there will be traffic on that bypass. And the counts are increasing dramatically all the time. Someone mentioned Fox Farm Road. That used to be my favorite secret, to come around Fox Farm Road. It's now so congested it doesn't do me any good. I might as well stay on the highway. Can't get back out on the highway. So what we've looked at in the refinement plan also are things we can do now until the bypass is built to make this livable. We cannot reduce the volume, and the volume will continue to increase. But we can make that space a space that, in spite of the volume, is decent. We can make that space a space that will be attractive to business investments. Nancy Ponzi mentioned that nobody's doing anything. Nobody's doing anything because if you put a retail business in there today, your potential customers can't make a left turn into your facility. People will not get off the highway to go to our retailers because they won't be able to get back on. So people just drive right through. And so we've talked about interim solutions. And as we near the end of this program today, we're going to be talking to you about how a modest amount of money towards interim solutions from the state of Oregon could dramatically help a little city that will never have the money to be able to do it themselves. So that's what we've done with the refinement plan.
You've certainly been thoughtful. There's absolutely no question of that. And I think sometimes, I know as mayor of Coos Bay, we had to keep reminding ourselves that the real mission of ODOT is to move traffic. It is not to worry about the person that's trying to get from the real estate office to the coffee shop. And I think that you have to take some of that on. But in this 99 West becoming your main street, is that more than a designation? Is it fair to ask, or should I wait until the director comes up here? What does that mean? That 99 will be your major. 99 goes through right now.
Let's talk about the future, if we might, if I may answer that question. I'd love to have you ask the same question to the director.
Sure.
But this vision visualizes that there is a bypass. And in that event, the volume, the projection show that the volume on that street will be that street. Now it's no longer the highway. That street will be 15,000 cars a day. That's ideal for retail. That you can have a restaurant that has an outdoor table with street plantings along that street. So that's the main street that we're planning for. And ODOT can help us get there. You all can help us get there with the bypass and with some interim improvements to allow us to start moving in that direction right now while we're choking. So does that answer your question?
Let me be sure I didn't misunderstand you.
Okay.
You're talking about 99 West being designated as a main street, or do you talk about your main street?
I see your question.
Being designated. In other words, what?
We're talking.
Is it an overlay?
That we didn't address that directly. We talked about it a lot, and what we recognize is that we may very well, at some point in time when the bypass is open, ask for the street to become a city street. Remove the designation of Highway 99, the state highway, to the bypass alignment and just turn it over to the city of Dundee as a city street. We'd love to deal with it as a main street.
Yeah, we've done two jurisdictional exchanges.
Exactly.
And they've been very successful. I want you to know that.
They are, and we're aware. And by the way, I want to take just a second of Dave Hagerberg's time to noticeably and distinctly compliment ODOT. I come from a background of having been involved in transportation elsewhere where ODOT frequently were the bad guys. And this newer ODOT that's looking for community-sensitive solutions that is working with us to work with our citizens to come up with the solutions is an ODOT that has been a pleasure to work with. And I wanted that to go on your record.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I know that ODOT appreciates that.
You'd also suggest, Madam Chair, you said that you want to call Director Warner. I'll go forward or allow you to do whichever you prefer.
Well, are you going to be the...
Be about 1 minute less.
You're going to do the wrap-up here?
No, about a long time.
Yes. All right. Well, let me have Director Warner come up because Senator Przanski must leave momentarily, and I'd like for him to hear your response as well.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Bruce Warner, the Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation.
You're among friends.
I am. Thank you. And I guess I want to make it also clear for the record that the Director and the Department are trying to move this project forward as quickly as possible. We believe it's critical to this area. I've driven down here many times on a Friday or a Sunday, and I know what people are talking about, and I believe it's a problem any day of the week right now. So
the first thing he did when he took over.
So
we had our committee.
So let's if I could, Madam Chair, members of the committee, just very quickly let you know where the project is. The project is, as Mr. Ragsdale pointed out, is not ready yet for construction, but it is at a point very shortly. We hope to have a record of decision on this project this summer, which will be our green light to begin acquiring right-of-way and actually moving forward on design of this project and moving it, you know, in post-haste towards construction. I want to stress this is a $300 million plus project. It is not a small project. It is will be one of the largest modernization projects the state ever undertakes.
And what are the phases involved? Are they just equally one-third, one-third, one-third? Or?
Madam Chair, good question, and I'd have my staff here to give you the numbers, but the phases that you see on the wall behind me are not equal price, but there is a phase that could be done, and I believe it was $80 million. Is that the price tag of phase one? And that's one way to approach a project. We need to look at that. I would also point out that in terms of the previous packages approved by the legislature, the Oregon Transportation Investment Act 1 and 2 from the 2001 and then the 2002 special session, that $500 million leveraged almost another $250,000, and there's 172 projects being built throughout the state of Oregon, which will be completed by 2008, which was also the intent of the legislature, to get the money to construction, put bricks and mortar on the road, and complete projects. In terms of the Oregon Transportation Investment Act 3, $1.3 billion was made available to repair bridges on the state highway system, $300 million for bridges on the city and county system, and What Representative Nelson is talking about is that there's a number of bridges that, as a result of our continued learning from looking at the research work done by Oregon State University for us, we are looking at the scope of the bridges that needed to be repaired or replaced, and making sure that, number one, they need to be replaced, or could we do something lesser like repair? And in some cases, if we do some minor modifications, can we not do anything to them for some time? Or in some cases, we found there's bridges we don't even need. So we are constantly looking at ways to reduce the cost and make sure that we're able to get those dollars to, first off, do the bridges that we committed to the legislature we would do, and then do it in the most cost-effective and least cost manner possible. And it's clear to say that we believe we can save money in this program. Right now, we believe that there's somewhere approaching $100 million of savings that would be available based on the estimates we have today. I want to stress to you that we're 1 year into an 8-year program, and $500 million worth of bridges are going to be out under construction in the next year and a half. And I'll be able to tell you, I think I told this committee a few months ago, that within the next year and a half, 2 years, by the time you're in session next time, I'll be able to, I think, report with certainty about what type of monies may be available as a result of savings from the work that we're doing.
And the bypass would qualify for those funds?
Well, again, my commitment to you, my commitment to legislatures, I would come back and have a dialogue with you about where those monies would go. If you look at the bridge issue, clearly we knew that $1.3 billion did not solve all of the bridge problems in the state of Oregon. We have close to a $5 billion problem here in the state of Oregon, just on the state system alone. So the options that we would ask you to consider would be, do you want to go further on the bridge, you know, the repairing bridges, or do you want to look at some other use? And clearly there's a lot of ideas about how you could use money, but my message to you today would be, don't start counting the money until we actually have the contracts under construction and see what happens with the price of steel and other things that could impact dramatically the cost of those projects. So I appreciate Representative Nelson's concerns and desires to utilize those monies, but I would be cautious until we have a lot more of the bridges under construction.
I think our presence here, however, expresses to you, Director Warner, a broader concern than just someone who represents this district. This is Hillsborough and Coos Bay, Klamath Falls, and Eugene, so I hope you take that as a broader interest in what this area is going through. In terms of what you do with the rest of that money, and I welcome any other comments from the committee, there needs to be some way of measuring what rises to the top in need. We could always build more bridges, or we could always repair more bridges or retrofit more bridges, but do we have bridges that are being used to the extent that the Dundee bypass would have? So I think we need to think in those terms, and I hope that conversation will take place at the legislative level. Because everyone, when money goes on the table, then everybody gets interested. But I think there needs to be some criteria that just simply says, we're sorry you can't be at the table, you don't qualify, you don't have enough traffic, your bridge isn't used as much, so forth. So I hope that that is established when that conversation takes place. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to compliment Director Warner. He's been exceedingly consistent when this issue has been brought up. And when I've been asked by other members, when I've been asked by constituencies that have projects that would very much like to have their hands on what is termed extra money, I go back to Director Warner's commitment to come back to us when we have a more definitive idea what kind of resources are available. And I appreciate the department's going out and doing this research, because we're saving taxpayers' money this way.
Absolutely.
And the work that we've done in the last couple of legislative sessions are legislative. They're in statute. The department's required to do certain things because we told them to do certain things, and there's nothing that would prevent the legislature moving forward to adjust what we told them to do before as we move forward. So I just think that I wanted to compliment the director, but I also think that it's up to us to decide how we spend these extra, quote, extra money, these savings, recognizing that it's the taxpayers' dollars that we're investing in this infrastructure. So I just wanted to get that on the record.
One of the advantages of the road trips is that we physically walk property, eyeball property, hear from constituents right there in their own communities, and I think that's important. Representative Nelson, would you like to have some closing comments before
we
leave?
Well, I think that was the best news of all, and I couldn't wait to possibly share that. And thank you, Director Warner. I just wanted to
thank you so
to
much for making an effort.
We never want to lose hope and faith, and you know, work like prayer doesn't count, and pray like work doesn't count, and we'll get there. And I appreciate everybody, and I really, Cinder Berger, for you to do this, and we've been great friends since day one, and I miss you in the house.
Thank you. Thank you.
Really,
we were neighbors in the house.
Yeah.
Our desks were right across
the
aisle.
I thank you so much, and all of y'all, this distinguished committee.
You're welcome, thank you for taking time on a beautiful Friday afternoon to join us. That was
so
great.
And I really appreciate everybody being here, and thanks to Commissioner Lewis.
I don't know if we're going to get a chance to have Director Warner back in front, but I have another question for him.
Okay, very good.
And I think we're going to hear some more as we wrap up in the discussion, I think, on the finance side of this project about the public-private partnership, mm-hmm. the innovative partnerships program that has been established out of Senate Bill 772. The question that I have is there's been a $20 million set aside, I believe out of OTA3, to help jumpstart the possibility that a private sector company would come in and put a proposal on the table for the department to look at. Is there, and I think that's great, and I appreciate the department's help, and obviously the department's been very supportive of that. Question I have, short of a new revenue source, is there an opportunity maybe with increased federal formula funds to increase that particular pot of money so that there's maybe an opportunity for more than one project to get funded, or that $20 million could go to a Newburgh-Dundee and, you know, a project on I-205 or something. Can you make a comment as it relates to that?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, yes, I'd be glad to make a comment. And the simple answer is yes. And you are correct on all parts in terms of what we've done with the OTA3 money. We've set aside $20 million to, as I call it, seed money to encourage businesses and private sector to step up and help us to look at projects like the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, and I believe you're going to hear a little bit more about that. But what you're referring to is the federal government looks like it will be taking, Congress looks like it will be taking action very shortly on a new reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Act. And if it goes as it appears it is going to go, there will be additional resources available to the state. And again, we'll have those discussions with you because we want, as we get into the Ways and Means process, I'm sure about where we want to put it. And I think I suspect that some of the private sector folks that will provide proposals on some of our projects will make that fact abundantly clear to us, I would suspect. So I look forward to those kind of proposals and an opportunity to leverage all sorts of dollars from the private sector, federal government, and ourselves.
Director Warner, is tolling still on the table for discussion? Are they still talking about tolling?
Madam Chair, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I grew up with toll roads. Mm-hmm. And there were many projects that were built that would have never been built
right. If
it had not been that they were able to build.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very
much.
Thank you so much for being so considerate and letting us
get... I think the three of us, we've decided how we can dramatically reduce
shorten
the balance
things.
and let us shorten this up so you can look around town.
All right. Very good.
We were going to tell you some more things about our EIS process and those kinds of items and context-sensitive solutions. We'd be happy to talk to you about that at some point, but we know your time is short, and we'd like to get you out so you can see the the wonderful city of Dundee. We would like to continue on and talk about the public-private partnership program. And you just asked Director Warner the question, you know, was tolling still being considered? And it is very much still being considered. And but with Senate Bill 772 that passed, there are many other opportunities now other than just tolling. I'd like to go ahead and hand these out, Judith, if we could. Thank you. As most of you probably know, because Senator Verger, you were in the 2001 session. Obviously, Senator Starr was there, and Senator George. That session created an innovative financing task force, and between the 01 and the 03 sessions, a lot of work was done to come up with what eventually became Senate Bill 772. And I want to thank Senator Starr for his efforts on Senate Bill 772. I think this is a major step forward for the state of Oregon. And Senator George, of course, you moved it through the Ways and Means Committee, and we appreciate that very much. After the 2003 session ended, ODOT established the Innovative Partnership Unit. And the administrative rules were written to implement Senate Bill 772. And that launched a process that started in October of 2004, so just last fall, a very exciting process. ODOT sent out requests for information. And as part of that RFI, they included 12 projects that private sector parties could express an interest in. And if you'll turn to, in your packets, I think it's the third page in your packets, it says Newburgh-Dundee Oregon Transportation Commission justifications. One of the things I wanted to point out here in this very first sentence, it says that in the RFI process that our project, the Newburgh-Dundee Transportation Improvement Project, received the most responses indicating a high potential of interest to accelerate delivery and provide innovative financing approaches. And we've actually had an opportunity. Several of the private sector companies have come and talked with the Newburgh-Dundee group. And so we've had an opportunity to find out a little bit, but a lot of it's proprietary, and we're not going to discuss it here today. But we've got a sense from them of what they believe they'll be able to do for our project. And it will include tolling. But if you know Senate Bill 772, you know it also. There's shadow tolling. There's tax increment financing. There's sale and development rights. There's a number of strategies that can be used to help to finance a project such as ours. Just if you would turn to the next page, you'll see the timeline of where we are right now with public-private partnership. In January of 05 at the Oregon Transportation Commission meeting, the commission agreed to forward three road projects, ours and a stretch of I-205 and then the Sunrise Corridor, into an official request for proposal process to bring on a private sector partner at what they call the pre-development stage. So that's Newburgh-Dundee is been forwarded into that process. That RFP, you can see on the timeline, is set to go out on April 29th. And you'll see the rest of the timeline here. We believe by the end of 2005, we will have a private sector partner selected to work on the Newburgh-Dundee Transportation Improvement Project. And from having talked to a couple of these private sector entities, as we mentioned, this is a great time for them to get on board. They'll come on at the design stage. They will help us do the tolling feasibility study. They will put together the financing strategy. All of this, of course, is subject to negotiation with ODOT and the Oregon Transportation Commission. And then during these pre-development services that they're going to provide, they will then have the ability to be the first entity to bid on the project when it goes to construction. So we are very excited by this process. I think it will greatly accelerate the design stage, which we are just about to head into. As Director Warner said, we expect the record of decision on the environmental impact study this summer. So we're just ready to launch off on the design stage.
When are your EIS?
Well, ODOT obviously has a project team. We've had, as Mayor Worrell mentioned earlier, or Dave Hagerberg mentioned, we had the project oversight steering team, which is made up of elected officials and people from state agencies and Federal Highway Administration that oversaw the entire project. And then in addition to that, we've had a number of consultants. Kogan Owens Kogan has done the public outreach, and we've had, I've lost count, I think we've had over 60 public meetings during the whole EIS process. It's just been extraordinary. We had URS, and I believe now they've changed, or the people have moved to a company called Parametrics. Is that right, Dave? Am I okay? So we've had a number of consultants working on the project to do the EIS. And that process has really gone quite well. I will tell you, if there's any stumbling block in the process of getting a road built, and remember, there have been very few 11-mile highways built in the state of Oregon in the last, so I've been here all my life. I think you have to go back to I-205, which was 1980, which was planned in the 60s. So you're going back 50 years of planning before you find another road that was built. So it's a complicated process, but I'll tell you, one of the biggest roadblocks that there is to building this highway has been land use. We actually finished the draft EIS in the fall of 2002. That was not quite a two-year process to do the draft EIS. It has taken us from 2002 to now to get the land use actions that are required by Oregon's land use laws. And that include a comp plan amendments, goal exceptions.
Right.
And having served in a city, we have three cities involved, all of whom had to adopt comp plan amendments. And then the county had to do not only comp plan amendments, but goal exceptions as well. So that was a major hurdle that other states do not have. But we've actually been very happy with the environmental process itself. That really went quite expeditiously. So that's where we are on public-private partnership. I just wanted to say, Representative Nelson stole a little of my thunder, which is fine, but I was going to ask the committee for your leadership in bringing more modernization dollars to the system. Sitting on the ACT, the Area Commission on Transportation, we literally are looking at 2010-2011 STIP and having $25 million statewide for modernization. For our region, Region 2, which is a very large region, we are roughly 30% of the state. We will have $7.5 million a year for modernization. And that's to fund projects in 9 counties. So that's all the money that's available for projects like Newburgh-Dundee, the Woodburn Interchange, improvements on Highway 22, the Beltline down in Eugene, the projects over on the coast on Highway 101. All of those projects are vying for $7.5 million beginning in 2010.
That's right.
So we have a great need
down in my region, and I think the process is wonderful because you get the people that, I mean, I loved being on with that group of people, because you get all of the cross section of people that serve, and they really come up with great projects. But you're absolutely right, Commissioner. At the end, there's no money for them.
That's right. That's right. And I would just like to, you know, encourage you. It's tough. It's a tough issue. I was in the legislature 95 to 99, and in 99, as you know, we attempted to pass. It's my fault. We attempted to pass House Bill 2080.
Just a freshman.
82. You were just a freshman. That's right.
That's the only reason, because
yeah. That's right. That's right. And you know, and we were not able to get that package passed the voters of the state of Oregon. And I understand, you know, the voters' concerns about rising gas prices, and they certainly shot up even since then. So, but still, we have critical infrastructure needs, and if part of that bridge money can be used for projects of statewide significance or to feed into the public-private partnership, or as Senator Starr has brought up, if we could use part of the federal funds, the increase in formula funds which we expect to receive from the T21 reauthorization, all of those things are going to help the state of Oregon, but we need leadership on how to fund modernization projects.
Well, you know, it's which comes first, the chicken or the egg. If we're an income tax state, totally dependent on the income tax, we have to have more jobs. And if you're going to create jobs, you've got to have things like the bypass. So there we are.
Thank you so much, Senator. And we're very happy that you represent part of Yamhill County. And
we welcome you
to our great county. And
thank
appreciate
you very
that.
Much, Commissioner. Yes. Yes. Senator Starr.
Thank you. And thank you, Leslie, for your testimony. And I think this might be... This is a good demonstration of how what we did last time is getting enacted. So I appreciate you bringing that to us. Talking about more modernization money, I'm going to turn around and ask you to work through with your colleagues at the local government levels, not just in Yamhill County but around the state, to continue to put pressure on legislators and on the OTC and on... other MPOs throughout the state that have ability to direct transportation dollars, that when we get an increase in federal funding that's coming, hopefully, if our Congress can get it together, that we highlight and don't forget to highlight the need for modernization. And you're correct. One of the things that we did in passing OTA 3 is we stole half the state's modernization money and bonded it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the ways we created the big pot of money to build some of these other projects.
Mm-hmm.
And on one hand, maybe that wasn't the greatest policy. On the other hand, it was an opportunity to hopefully jumpstart and get projects out the door. But it does leave the state shorthanded as far as modernization. There are going to be dollars coming in without the legislature doing anything else, at least federally. And I would ask that you and your fellow county commissioners and city council members throughout the state continue to highlight that issue to not only their legislators, but to our commission as well. So thank you.
I think you have our commitment to do that. This group has been very vocal on all of the funding packages because we realize that not only does it help our project, but it helps all projects in the state of Oregon. And while we're kind of selfish, we also realize we have to help other people too. So.
I had a presentation on some additional parts of it, but I'll drop it and I'll cut right to the chase. We would like to see you indicate your desire to see the funding in the public-private partnership startup money increase from the $20 million. We would concur, Senator Starr, with the desire to have this committee, the Senate, and the legislature, including Ways and Means, indicate that we'd like to see new increased revenues go to projects of statewide significance. And we would love it if the legislature would go so far as to even designate this project as one of their favorites, which I know could have some influence. We also would have a smaller request, and I don't have a dollar amount, and that's that you would lend legislative influence for us to be able to get some funds yet to be identified into our interim improvements on Highway 99 in Dundee. And those are the three things that we would ask of you to assist us in this project.
One of the things that they've done this session that I don't know why it took us so long to think about that, but they have put policy and Ways and Means together. So people who are making policy are serving on Ways and Means. And it is certainly beneficial. You get to see both sides and you get to bring those other things to the table. So,
well, Madam Chair, I'll wrap up for about 1 minute.
All right. Very good.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator George, Representative Thatcher, my name is Dave Hogeberg. I just thought it would be helpful before I introduce a document to tell you about the extraordinary support in terms of people for this project. And all of these pages, I mean, here are 2,453 signatures.
Here's 2,204 more. Here's 4,448 more. And then here are two books full of single-page sheets of paper with signatures on them supporting innovative financing, supporting this project. Thousands, more than 10,000 signatures of people that are supportive of this project. We put together a brochure, and I want to make it a part of the record. And some of you will note that your names are on this record, in this brochure. But let me suggest to you that on the back where we talk about bypass supporters, these are individuals who are elective offices or appointive offices or businesses. We couldn't make it long enough to put all the people who wanted their individual names on it. So it is a real pleasure that we present to the committee those, and I've got more copies for the record. And then, as a token of appreciation for this committee and the leadership that you have taken in highway improvements and transportation in Oregon, I have a presentation from the Parkway Committee. And my greatest regret with this is that I had so much wished it had been my idea. A man decided that what we really ought to have is a jar of traffic jam. And so the past mayor, Chuck Cox of Newberg's company, put together these bottles of traffic jam with a label, and it talks about a traffic jam, and the ingredients are, you know, a lot of traffic and a lot of noise, and it's thickest on holiday weekends. But we have one for each of you, and so
that
it's an expression of our appreciation.
Great.
So thank you very much.
Oh, for goodness sake. That is very, very clever. I often say, I wish I had said that, but now you can say, I wish I had done that. That is just...
Could you see that the Senator Provinsky gets that, please?
Yes, absolutely.
And that concludes our presentation, other than the Mayor of Dundee.
Actually, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm just so grateful you're here and stayed so long to hear us.
Oh, absolutely.
And we appreciate it very much. No. And for those that would like to go on a tour of Dundee and head over to dinner after that, we would welcome that. And
well, I'm going to take you up on your invitation.
Thank you.
I'm very appreciative of the kind of work and organization that they've put into the presentation to us today. You needn't even say you appreciated our coming. This expresses it very much so, and all the work that you've done in getting ready for us. We hope by coming out that you know who we are, that you see a face with a name, that you hear us talk about transportation in real life and with human faces on it, and that we're not just some name up there in Salem, like the gold man on the top of the Capitol, that you can't reach. And so we're working hard in trying to understand the needs in Oregon. We have a lot of needs, but at the basis of all of them, we've got to have jobs. And if we don't develop some economic opportunities in Oregon, we're going to lose. We're already losing too many of our young people today going to other parts of the country where they can find employment. On the coast, we've lost to the valley so that we have declining enrollment, whereas the other schools have crowds moving into them. So we all have different problems that need to be addressed, but that doesn't mean that we can't address them. And there has to be some prioritizing in problems. It's just like in a family. Sometimes we're all well, and sometimes somebody gets sick. And guess what? Everybody has to hunker down and take care of whatever needs to be done in that. So I'm very, very strong in prioritization. I'm also very strong in looking at small communities as well as large. And I think we're all affected by each other. And I believe that we are totally connected in our success and in our quality of life. We cannot continue to cut education and build prisons. We cannot continue to not provide the quality of life that Oregonians need. And for those of you who have been here all of your life, which I have not been, but I so deeply appreciate the way you feel about Oregon, because I felt that way about my own home state. And it isn't hard for me to understand when Ken Austin tells me I went to high school there. We all have these places that are our own, and it's been a privilege for me personally to come to Dundee today. I couldn't have been happier, and I couldn't be more pleased with the turnout and the presentation that you've made. So I don't know how many. I think Senator Starr needs to leave. Do you have time to take in a quick tour, or do you need to leave?
Okay. Madam Chair, I don't know, but perhaps Senator George or Representative Thatcher might want to offer a few words as well. They've been, as I say, our legislative delegation has always been 100% behind us, going way back even before my time in the legislature. And even though the people change, we've had great support from Representative Thatcher, even though she's, you know, brand new, and Senator George has been helping us for many years, so I don't know if one of them wants to say something.
Well, I'd be happy for them to say something, and I suspect that their cooperation and others has been the quality of the people that are behind them. But would you like to say a few words?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have some remarks prepared, but I'm just going to skip those because I think most of it's been said. But what it really boils down to is we can continue with some of the words that I heard repeated today, were the choking of the community, industry being incentivized going away from here, or we can take advantage of the asset that we do have in this area and the great potential and economic development that's possible here and move forward. I'm just so impressed with how this is all coming together. We're all speaking pretty much with one voice. And I do have a question for you, however. If you had the money on a silver platter right now, what would stop you? What would be a risk still out there that could stop this project from moving forward, and what can this body do for you?
Well, Representative Thatcher, I think that's a great question. I don't know if anybody else wants to answer it. I think I mentioned the land use system in the state of Oregon. I will tell you, I think that's one of the major risks to this project or any transportation infrastructure project. And pardon me, Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher. We do have all of the land use actions that I mentioned, that the three jurisdictions, the three cities, Dayton, Dundee, and Newburgh, all the land use actions that they took and the land use actions that the county took are now under appeal at the Land Use Board of Appeals. And I know Senator Verger knows this well from having served in local government. This can be a very long process. And I know Senator Starr at one point had entertained, I believe with Director Warner, the concept of doing some streamlining of the land use process in order to be able to site infrastructure projects. And frankly, we haven't had the support, I believe, from the executive branch to do that. So that is one of the risks for this project that could delay us for a long time. I've served on my county planning commission since 1990, and then I served there for 10 years, and now I've been on the Board of Commissioners for the last 5 years. So for 15 years, I've dealt with land use planning. And so I know the process well, and I know what we're facing, which is the endless rounds up to LUBA, remand back to local government, up to LUBA again, then up to Court of Appeals. Then remand back down, then back up again, and probably all the way to Oregon Supreme Court. So that's, I will tell you that one of the reasons why it took ODOT and the consultant team so long to even get the land use applications to the local governments, and that process was a very long process, well over a year from the time the project oversight steering team decided on the recommended route. It was over a year before ODOT came to us as an applicant for the land use changes that needed to be made. And what took an incredible amount of time was the complexity of the land use laws and the documents that they had to write that are literally, I've got them still in my office. They go from the floor up to here. The land use documents for the county level at the Gohl exceptions. I was frustrated by how long it took, but I had to keep reminding myself they have to build a really good record. We will have remands. They will, you know, LUBA will say that will sustain some of the assignments of error that the opponents say we have. So there will be remands, but if we've created a good record, we can come back around and do the appropriate findings and move it back up so that it can come back again on remand. But that's the process we have in Oregon.
Madam Chair, can I just add one thing to that?
Sure.
Members of the committee, Senator Starr. ODOT has told us that once we get a record of decision from the federal government, that we can proceed to acquire right-of-way, particularly critical right-of-way. And as you look at that map, we are even today in risk in terms of some of the right-of-way. And the committee can be very helpful, and the funding is critical to start buying that right-of-way. And we would urge that we be able to go forward and do that in terms of the necessary funding. And if we don't, all of this will be moot, as I mentioned earlier. So the things that this committee does to urge ODOT to move projects like this one forward are absolutely critical, because we can do those things, and we really need to.
I do believe that it is much clearer when you make an effort to do what we've done today than to, in a committee meeting, say to Director Warner, we support the Dundee-Newburgh bypass. I think that that's fairly easy to say. But I think when you take a Friday and you come to Dundee and you listen and you have the director here, then that takes on another dynamic. And I hope that everyone does see that. What about the committee? Would you like to say anything?
Thanks, Madam Chair. For the record, State Senator Gary George, District 12. Yesterday I had an opportunity to drive into Washington State. And Washington State has a massive population growth caused by Oregonians who are moving to Washington State. And I was at the Port of Kalama, and I saw businesses going there because of the fact that they have all kinds of positive tax structures that are inviting them in there. And I saw construction of all of the necessary infrastructure, including highways and roadways, in order to accommodate that new jobs that are going to be created. But I want to finish with that by reminding us that if they can do it, and when I saw it, Commissioner Lewis is very much familiar with what we saw when we were in Alaska. If they can do it with that pristine environment they have there, they should be able to accomplish these projects here. But I want to share with you saw me come in, and I was here for a while, and then I left because I had to go to a doctor's appointment. And as you know, and Madam Chair, you've sympathized with me, and I realized that this was a transportation problem. And I got into the doctor because we've been through months now of hobbling around the Capitol, and Gympie and all the other names that I've been called. But, Madam Chair, I have to tell you, we went through extensive tests. I've left the building in order to go get tests. And the test came back, and heart is good, and liver is now good, and all these things are really good, except that I'm suffering for the need of a bypass. And the only way that I would get better, the doctor said, was for immediate construction. And so I think that just about sums it up for the day.
Really, I ran for the Senate because I've been rural. I've been rural all my life, and everything I own, I derived from the rural economy and culture. And I think that a small community like this needs to be heard and understood. It's not just because 30,000 cars pass through a day doesn't mean you don't exist here. And so I think that's a to follow up on what Senator George said, we're seeing the same thing along the California border. Businesses are not coming to Oregon for our great environment. They're leaving because of our land use planning and other regulations. We have a bill introduced that would eliminate LUBA and replace it with an elected Board of Appeals. And from that appeal you would go directly to the Supreme Court, so it would take a whole step out of the process. I think those are things that we need to eliminate a lot of our process and get on with the construction. It sounds like you've been planning this for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there was ever a poster child for changing the planning process, or to grease the skids on it to make it more effective and more responsive to the citizens, this would certainly be it.
As we drove into Dundee today and coming through all that beautiful farmland in rural America, I always have this wish in my heart that we can set policy that matches the grandeur of our environment. It's so beautiful, and we've never gotten there. We just aren't there yet. But someday, if as a people, we can do the kinds of things that match the beauty of what we live in, I think we will have reached a true goal. So having said that, thank you again. I'll take you up. We have our van. If other people would like to join us in the van, we need someone to tell us that that's this and that's this. So we need a guide. But if we
have a guide.
Good.
Mr. Ragsdale, we'll be
all
taking
right.
you on
thank
that.
You very much, Mayor. That is just too good. Thank you so much.
Need a
gavel. Oh, with no other business to come before this, but
he's still here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a gentleman that has waited through everything. I'm going to reopen the Senate Bill 865 public hearing and welcome Rod Park to the table. Right, I almost forgot you. I got so excited about going to see Dundee.
Let me get my things off your table.
Okay. Your table, not mine. Madam Chair, thank you for reopening for the time. Would have been here earlier if we could have got on the I-599 bypass. But,
we like that part.
I know that'll make Senator Starr happy. Well, anyway, my name is Rod Park. I'm a Metro Councilor. My district is on the far east side of the region. It's from the Portland Airport to Troutdale to the newly formed city of Damascus. And this is, I should also say, also includes Happy Valley. I currently I'm vice chair of the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation for the Portland Metro Region. It is a 17-member committee of local elected officials that, along with the Metro Council, sets the region's transportation policy. JPAC, as we call it, is a critical role that it plays in the federal transportation funding for the region and programming the way those dollars are spent. Recently, 35 of us elected and appointed officials went back to Washington, D.C. to lobby our congressional delegation for additional dollars. We've done fairly well as a region. We follow what is called the Hatfield rule, which is that you may have your arguments in the hallway, but when you're in that congressional delegation's office, you all agree. And
right.
It's been very effective for us. So, like I said, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity for comments on Senate Bill 865. I want to say at the outset that Metro believes that Oregon could benefit from undertaking a comprehensive study of the state's transportation needs in order to demonstrate the transportation's importance to the economy and to the long-term livability of our communities. Such a study should examine the long-term benefits of our investment in our roads and other modes of transportation, as well as the need for adequate funding to maintain and preserve our existing transportation facilities. I should also say, as Metro Council positions are part-time, like legislative positions, I'm also a nurseryman, former chair of the Board of Ag, and a former president of the Oregon Association of Nurserymen. And in this particular area, you do happen to have two fairly large nurseries, Carlton Plants and Monrovia, which do ship a few trucks out of the region and bring a few dollars back in. So well aware of the issues of transportation and the role it plays in freight. We know that freight is critical to the region and the state's economy, and we would welcome any analysis that helps us to best determine how to address the anticipated increases in freight volume over the next couple decades that are projected to double. Unfortunately, Senate Bill 865, as we currently understand there are some amendments that have been written, we feel falls short of these objectives. few concerns that we have. First, that it's too narrow and that the geographic scope only addresses the Portland metro region. And I think after listening to today's testimony that, as I understand the bill currently written, would not address perhaps the bypass out here in the Dundee-Newburgh, which would be certainly a critical piece of how the region, the greater region, operates. Second, it seems to focus on reexamining transportation decisions in the past, which there may be some benefit to looking at those. Would like to remind the committee, however, that the region itself, through very much local control, through working with our local partners, has a 2040 growth concept that has been approved both by ODOT and LCDC as we're trying to build livable communities in the Portland metro region, as well as other I know other places in the state are. As you know, there's an elaborate system in place which transportation funding decisions are made. Other areas have area commissions on transportation. We have an MPO called JPAC that functions for us. It is a coordination of local, regional, and state and federal partners. We have some critical decisions that will be ahead of us, such as the I-5 bridge, how that will be funded, how that will be, what will be its use. We've had some excellent testimony, for example, from the tugboat community as to the problems they have. If you haven't heard from them and their how they work with the I-5 bridge, time of day, the swiftness of the current, the height. It's very amazing that we haven't managed to wipe out part of that bridge or the railroad bridge at this particular time. As I said before, the federal government has authorized urban areas represented by metro planning organization, MPOs, to make these decisions on projects that affect their communities. There are often strict limits on these dollars. These decisions are also made collectively with the cities and the counties and the ports and a very extensive public input. As I said, there may be utility in determining the effectiveness of transportation investments we have made, but I would also hope and submit that you would rather spend your time on, instead of it re-examining how it's been spent in the past, but on making the case and identification of new resources for our current and future transportation system needs. Third, communities invest in transit infrastructure also to achieve multiple objectives and efficiencies. Mobility, so people of all ages, incomes, and abilities can get to work, school, and play. Addressing the needs of a growing population and also in age as well as size, maintaining the capacity on our roads and reduction and highways for reduction of travel by single occupancy vehicles, providing transportation choices to enhance the operation of the system, protecting air quality, which has a definite public benefit, but also an economic development part of it, because as there's a finite amount of airshed, those areas that can stay within compliance, we know areas like Atlanta and others have been cut off potentially from their federal funding because they've exceeded their air quality limits. That has a direct effect back on companies like Intel and others who would have to put the next generation scrubbers on their facilities. So we're also trying to stimulate commercial and residential development along our transportation corridors. Senate Bill 865, we feel, evaluates transit, however, in only one of these criteria. It calls for a study to determine the reduction of highway use provided by financial investment into mass transit. We believe it would be more productive to assess transit investments on their own terms with respect to the multiple objectives of transit projects themselves. I guess I would put this akin to just looking at the deepening of the channel for the port of Portland and others as just looking at the immediate benefit, not the secondary benefits that we see of that. More recently, the private sector has realized the benefits of investing in the transit system by being financial partners in the construction of Airport Max, as well as Portland Streetcar. But even with their help, there is still a need for additional funding from all levels of government. In the metro region, we have taken large steps to examine our transportation needs. We currently spend almost 60% of our transportation dollars available in our region for capital improvements on the road and freight system. We have currently estimated a $4.4 billion funding gap to meet our road, freight, and transit needs over the next 20 years. It's approximately an $8 billion system that is planned in order to keep congestion hopefully within the bounds that we can survive. You should also know that we are partnering with our private sector and with the Portland Business Alliance to try and better determine the relationship between transportation and the economy in the Portland region, and think a similar study statewide would be of a major benefit. So in conclusion, we would welcome any effort that you would have in result of examining the needs and benefits of further investments in the entire transportation system. We feel that this should be a statewide effort and geared towards making our system competitive with the other growing states and regions that are investing billions of dollars in the future. And once again, thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you for being here. And if you wouldn't mind, could we have your testimony so that we could have copies of it that we might put in our bill?
I will clean this up and return it to you.
Would you do that? The other question, and I know Senator Starr probably has questions for you as well, but one question I want to be sure as to your position. You said the bill is too narrow. You would rather approach it transgender. But then in your other testimony, it indicated to me that you're already spending quite a bit of time and money on looking at the metro area. By that, as the bill stands, do you think it's unnecessary?
Well, we think that the study that we're doing is of small geographic scope in the Portland metro region. It's approximately $65,000. So in consulting dollars, you know that's like pennies. But we think it gives us a good start as for the potential of examining our system and looking at a regional transportation offering. It might be based upon registration fees or some other things, but within the Portland metro region. We believe a study like this, however, has a benefit because of the way we're interconnected with the rest of the state. And my nursery products have to get from here either down south into California or east to the rest out to New York and other places. So we're very much interconnected, and if we can look at the linkages from the coast to the eastern side and from the northern border to the southern border, I think it would be a better study.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony and appreciate you waiting to give it. You mentioned a 60% figure, 60% of the dollars are spent on highways in the metro area?
Yes.
60% of
yes.
What dollars?
Of the federal dollars and state and local that come into the area. That is the...
Here's my question. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that number. That's 60%.
Mm-hmm.
So 40% isn't.
Correct.
That's important. The question that I have is, what percentage of those flexible federal dollars that come to the state, come to that JPEC has the ability to determine where it gets spent, what percentage of those dollars, and I think that's a smaller geographic reach than your 60%, which you're already, put on, but so what percentage of those federal, flexible federal funds, these are dollars that could be spent on anything.
Yeah.
What percentage of those get spent on highways to reduce congestion and to promote freight movement in the metropolitan area?
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator Starr, thank you. The should start with the 60% figure is the amount of dollars that, as I said, come to the state. A majority of that comes from the 40% are federal dollars for transit that can only be used for transit, so I should clarify that. Of the percentage of that you're talking about that comes to the Portland metro region, the that go to the MTIP process that we have is approximately 4% of all the money that's spent in the Portland metro region. Of that, we're required to spend 40% to non-road projects. That's part of the congestion management air quality requirements that come attached with those dollars. Currently, we spend 60% of those dollars, of the total that we're allowed to, for road and freight projects. So 40% is what we're spending let me flip that around. 60% of that on non-road projects, 40% on road projects. So it's about 2% of the dollars that come into the Portland metro region.
And that's in reality is the only real, you don't have a huge say over projects that are on the STIP that are funded through the State Transportation Improvement Program that the Commission approves, correct?
Actually, we do in the sense that they approve our MTIP process, we approve the STIP. So it's as the federal requirement as MPOs exceed 200,000, it's the requirement that the feds have it in the system. So the other ones obtaining that, I believe, are also the just this year, I believe, is the Salem-Keizer area and one other. I'm trying, and I don't remember which one it is. So that has the same requirement as the Portland Metro region now. The relationship.
I appreciate the testimony. I appreciate you coming. I appreciate. I think Councillor Park is one of the Metro councillors that does have a business background and understands these issues. Maybe I don't want to be negative on the other councillors, but I think he has a different perspective than most of the other councillors. But I would just suggest that as they make the argument that it doesn't make sense to look backwards, I think that it does, and in that we can identify we spent X number of resources on these projects, and here's the result that we got from those expenditures. And as we plan for the next 20 years or 40 years,
mm-hmm.
We ought to learn from the lessons of where we've spent those resources in the past. And, you know, I understand we've got $4.4 billion worth of need out there. So I don't have a big problem understanding the scope of the need. I think we need to understand the trade-offs as it relates to going forward how we spend those resources. And that's one of the reasons why I think this is important. I do believe, and I think the testimony that you provided with the PBA, Metro, and other local government study, I think would complement this particular effort so that you have a good picture of how we spend these resources. If the committee wants to make it a statewide study, you know, we can make it a statewide study. I think that expands the cost of it overall, but I think I would make the argument that the crux of our freight problems are in the Portland metropolitan area. Not to say there aren't some other places. Obviously, there are. But for what it's worth, I appreciate you taking the time and sticking around.
I should. Yes.
What's the question?
Tussle Park. I could not agree with Senator Starr more. I think that it really goes to efficacy
mm-hmm.
of what previous investments have achieved for us, and if we don't know what those efficacies are, then how will we know not to reproduce something that's not working very well?
Mm-hmm.
And also on the 60-40 split, it'd be interesting to see, again, within efficacy, how much freight and people movement is supported by the 60% investment as compared to freight and people movement compared to the 40% investment as it exists today.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Starr, I think it's the point we were trying to make is if the study is going to be of value, and I think that it could be of value, is that it, not only in the geographic scope, but as to broadening it as to not just transit, but in terms of looking at how it relates to the freight system also. And the reason for that is there's other ways, there's many ways of operating your business. One is to just go out and look for more customers, for example. The other is to be more efficient for what you're doing. One of the ways that we believe that transit helps, especially in the peak hours where there's a lot of congestion, and when you look at that 83% of the time the system is underutilized, it's kind of hard in terms of efficiency sometimes to convince the public to spend more money on a public facility. But we look at it in terms of by reduction of pulling single occupancy vehicles off through the transit system as an example, that it opens up freight capacity because we have fewer people that are out. An example would be, even though there's a theoretically a low amount of traffic using the transit system as a whole, in the I-84 corridor, it's approximately 30% of the peak time traffic now. That's the equivalent of an extra lane each direction in that particular corridor. And if anybody's been out in the area knowing the Sullivan's Gulch area, that there is not the ability to add capacity, road capacity in that particular spot. So we're doing the best we can in the areas that we, within the confines. I remind me of the picture behind you in terms of the same type of thing. There's a little more pavement in the area, not as much dirt, but we are working on those same type of things. So we're just suggesting to make it comprehensive in order to make it truly valuable.
Where I grew up, that's metropolitan.
Well, out of my nursery, I still got areas like that. So.
One of the things that always concerns me is duplication. And I asked them to start a day about the metro, the group that came from the metro area. And it was my understanding that they were doing a traffic study. Mm-hmm. And that apparently is not the case. Is that right?
Yeah, it's more of an economic study as to, as Senator Starr, is when he's in his other hat in, with the Portland Business Alliance, is aware that it is more about how the economy and freight are tied together. And I think that, quite honestly, in some of the discussion, it is going to be an education process because in a prior meeting, it was readily apparent that some of the businesses didn't quite understand the same connections. And I think the senator would agree to that. And so we're trying to help them see the connections because we think that there needs to be a lot of investment in many modes, in all the modes of transportation, not just one, in order to achieve the what we hopefully will be ambitions for the state, and which is have a very vibrant economy. So, okay. I'm selfish. I like to eat, too. So.
Well, thank you for your patience today.
Well, thank you for your time.
I was sorry that you weren't here when we had the public hearing, but I'm going to now close the public hearing on Senate Bill 865. And if there's no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.